Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. How you guys doing? This is Jonathan Mooney of the Independent Corner, and we are back. We took a hiatus, I guess. We were supposed to do a show on Sunday, but we had to reschedule because Blog Talk Radio was revamping their site. So hopefully, I really like the new site. It's really interesting and really kind of cool and different, and got a new look and new feel to it. So my guests tonight are going to be coming on in a little bit, hopefully. They are Mike Hoffman, Megan Jones, and some more of the crew and cast of Reunion of Terror, a movie that if you know my MySpace and you see my updates and stuff about it, you know that you've probably looked at the trailers that were on YouTube. So hopefully when they call in, I'll plug them in and get them on here. It says we're supposed to only have 5 callers, so hopefully there will be only 5. There's going to be definitely Mike and Megan for the whole time, and then more, you know, as time goes by. But let's see. The switchboard seems to be telling me that there's nobody calling in yet, so hopefully they'll call out. Oh, hold on 1 second. And, hello, Mike?
Yep, I'm here.
All right, hey, what's going on, man?
How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Yep, so we got you in here. I guess Megan's going to be calling in soon, right?
I'd say, yeah, well, that's 5 minutes or so she'll be called. So will Christian Anderson, who starred in 3 of the last features I directed.
Oh, he starred in all 3 of them?
He did, yeah. He was actually just featured in Spring Break Massacre, but yeah, he's the star of Reunion of Terror and as well of Sigma Di.
Oh, wow, that's really cool. So you got to work with a lot of the same people or just a couple?
Just a couple, you know. Low-budget independent filmmaking isn't for everybody, so it's a tough, brutal ordeal to complete a film in, you know, God, 7-8 days sometimes, you know, with a limited budget. So the 24/7 shooting schedule tends to get to a lot of people that might not want to return.
they don't have as much fun as they thought they would, right?
Yeah, you know, that's what I said when I was first financing. I'm directing a feature with some money in the budget. I'm like, you know, I thought this would be funner because making independent films myself always, you know, were so much fun.
Yeah, exactly. And
Hold on one second. I'm going to get Megan to call in real quick, all right?
Okay.
Give me a second.
All right. Well, just so you guys know, he had done a bunch of movies, let's see, Reunion of Terror, Spring Break Massacre, and Sigma Di.
Right.
So, and you had also financed 2 other movies by yourself, right? Like, with your friends or whatever, and did Scary Tales, right?
Absolutely, yeah. The first one was with a friend of mine, Bill Casinelli, who actually wrote a lot of it, and it was kind of a one-man movie, and it was a test because I kind of splurged and got a Canon XL1.
Okay, hold on. We got a caller. Hello, is this Megan? Hello? Megan, are you there? Michael, are you there?
Yeah, I'm absolutely here. I don't know what happened.
Can she hear me?
No, I don't think she can, because she's actually just let everybody know that she's with me. So we're doing I saw it in ourselves, and I don't know what.
Okay, for some reason, it just I put her on, and then it just completely just cut it off. So, all right, hold on.
Hello?
Megan, yeah, you're here. Okay.
Hey, okay. My phone totally died.
Okay, I was wondering what happened, because that was kind of weird. But,
yeah, it's still faded.
Okay, so did it just go out of service or something?
Something like that. I'm in a very strange place. I don't know if Mike told you what's going on.
Yeah, a lot of us after we completed Rock got together, and I'm here with Megan and Ryan Kopp, who did a lot of the score for the film. We actually decided to, we've been working nonstop for the last couple years on these films. They were all shot back to back to back. So we decided to go up to Disney for the rest of the week just to celebrate completion. Before we go back and start working on another film I'm recutting right now called Hogzilla. So it's been very busy.
Wow, that's really cool. So how did you guys get hooked up with doing these movies?
Oh, dear God. You tell the story.
this is the longest story in the world. Actually, what happened was we were talking real quick about Scary Tales. It's probably a good place to start. But I made a $1,400 film, which was basically a one-man movie with my buddy in the lead. And the whole purpose of the film was just to test the camera, because at the time, I think I was 19 or 20, the XL1 was like a brand new camera. It was like unheard of, like a prosumer level camera with a professional quality image. And, you know, we went and shot the whole film as camera tests. And we ended up putting together an anthology that to me really wasn't very good. But either way, we sold it. And then we ended up making a sequel that actually, to me, was a lot, like, I actually enjoyed making. It was a lot of fun. And the sequel got kind of a cult reputation, and we started playing film festivals, and we did things like, I was promoting it at Flashback Weekend up there with one of the film stars, Felissa Rose. She was in Sleepaway Camp before that. We played at the Rebel Film Festival, where we won Best Picture in Chattanooga, Tennessee. We showed at Dark Xmas in Warren, Ohio. We ended up all over the, you know, U.S. promoting this thing. But, you know, in the interim, Megan, you want to continue the story about...
Actually, we have another caller.
Oh, okay.
Calling in, a 323 number, do you?
Probably the lead of the films out there in L.A.
323, who is this?
Hey, this is Christian Anderson.
Oh, hey, what's going on, man?
Not much, living the dream.
And Christian, we should say, has actually been a big star lately. I see him on TV all the time.
Right. Not enough.
No, not for me. Absolutely.
Hey, Christian.
Hey, who's that?
It's Megan.
Megan! How you doing?
Good.
Are you
a big star. You are a big star. I'm serious.
Right. Thank you.
Hey, you are to
on
us.
TV.
We see you all the time on TV. No, but Christian actually just did a Jack Links commercial that we saw him in. And we're like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting there on that.
The old beef jerky. It's the old poo in front of the cave trick.
Well, Christian, you're a Midwestern boy, right?
Yeah, I'm from Nebraska.
Well, there you go. So that's the
part of my upbringing.
Christian,
as you can tell by Christian and myself over the last few years, I'm sure, you know, we haven't eaten enough of that or drinking
Mike.
Beer. Yeah,
Christian, don't ever listen to Mike, because you made more money off that commercial than we'll probably, you know, ever see.
Yeah, right. I don't think so. I still live in an apartment. I heard you guys have a huge bathtub.
The sex tub at the place? Yeah.
Must be nice.
Yeah, we're living the dream out here in a villa with a giant. Our room is 1/4 kitchen, 1/4 bedroom, half bathroom with a giant sex tub. You know, so it's just like right here between curtains. So it's amazing.
People would die for that.
I hope not.
Because we're
people might die
enough,
in that,
so.
But not for that.
Right. Hey, it could be a good scene in a movie.
Oh, you want to start?
No, I didn't.
Let's start it.
Camera, a quick call on Jeremy, and we could actually make more money than we did off of all three films.
All right, people.
All right. So
the story I was telling wasn't very interesting, but the bottom line is we ended up moving to Pittsburgh, and we wrote a little bit for Corbett Burton from Major League and the Dennis films. Ended up at a convention in Las Vegas. Met a guy named Patrick Engelman, who ended up investing in a couple of films. And then after that was done, one of the films needed pickup shots. Another producer came in to help complete. When the film couldn't get the pickups, then he decided to produce a feature that was like that film, but more spoofy and campy, and that was Sigma Dot. So that's how we ended up with all our films, real quick.
That's like the Cliff Notes version?
That's the Cliff Notes version. There was a lot of living homeless and stealing toilet paper out of the public mall just to survive, which is true.
Yeah, and if a lot of people want to check out, I saw that you have like a couple of articles like about filmmaking.
Oh, yeah, we wrote a pretty good one on the Video Graveyard, and it ends with a positive ending. And just to let everyone know that reads about that guy, it's a positive ending. He turned out to be the biggest con artist of them all.
What did we name that guy? We wrote that article.
I think wasn't it obscenity? I think it was.
It was Ass Blaster, I thought.
Oh, it was Ass Blaster. Okay.
Can we actually curse on this?
Yeah, you can say whatever. It's unmature.
You can add a curse real quick.
What'd you say?
You got to add a curse and you can do it on the radio.
Son of a bitch.
There you go. All
Christian,
right.
You are now Howard Stern. What do you
say? Yeah,
think?
All right. That was easy.
No, yeah. After the film, I really want to talk about, and the reason I really wanted Christian to call in was Reunion of Terror, because I think that Christian gives a really good, solid performance in this film, and I think it's got a twist ending that's really, really unexpected when you watch the picture. And that was the first film that I actually had directed in Los Angeles, because just to let everyone know, I actually live in Florida. So, you know, I'd used Christian in Spring Break and just really liked him. When I was cutting the movie, I was like, Jesus, this guy is great. And
I get that a lot. I get that a lot.
I didn't know.
So how come you had to shoot in L.A.? Was that part of the producer's deal?
Oh, producer's there. Yeah, right. There were many producers that came and went from that film. There were quite a few that disappeared before it was over. But it was Christian will tell you, it was a tough shoot. I'm sure Christian remembers a lot of it.
Well, it was challenging. But, you know, things worth making are not easy.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
You know?
There was a few run-ins with the local game wardens as well. Because I kept getting shut down for filming without permits, and at one time, I think the first DP that was working on the film with me was, we were towing, one of the producers couldn't even get us, like, a car mount to shoot with. So
yeah, he wasn't, no, park rangers were not messing with you. Mike decides, because, hey, we can't afford a car mount, I'm going to stand in the back of a moving pickup truck. To get the
No, that was actually the bed of a flatbed tow truck.
And then I'm driving. So if he falls off, I'm going to run him over.
Right. Exactly.
So anyway, yeah. So we're like towing a car. We're, you know, at one point we're towing a car for the first shoot. And so I could get like a through the windshield two shot. So the DP and I are standing on this flatbed, nothing holding us on, going down like a mountainous road out there in Los Angeles, holding up traffic, filming through this windshield of this car we're towing.
And I'm getting a hand job.
Well, your character is.
Like, Megan, thanks for that.
Right?
On our way back to location, like, when we're out there shooting, the game one pulls us over and walks up and literally looks at us. And he's like, do I even have to say anything? You know? And we're like, not really. And he's like, that's good. Get out of here. You know? And, of course, the next day we went back and reshot the same things again. Actually did the exact same shot for another scene on the same road. But, you know, that was some of the challenges. That and... Wasn't there an exploding truck at one point, Christian?
There was a fire. There was a small fire.
One of our prop vehicles decided to catch on fire about four times. And
yes.
You know what? We couldn't stop shooting, so they're like, hey, let the fire burn itself out. We'll start it again.
So the prop vehicle decided on its own to do that?
Yeah, no. There's a camcorder tape of it, but no. See, the game ward has a truck, which, you know, we turned this beautiful truck. into the game board's vehicle, and whenever I needed it to be anywhere, it wouldn't run. And it decided one day to blow up. So I turn around, I'm like, where the hell is the truck? And I think that's when I lost it, when I saw the whole engine was on fire. The guy was throwing, like, Richard over there at the property, was throwing a shirt on.
Well, it wasn't the first thing that got set on fire for the sake of our shoot, though.
What do you mean? What else did we burn?
What else did we burn, or what else got burned in our travels?
I thought the camper started on fire.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
RV.
On the 405.
We're on like a 9-day shoot, remember, one camera. And it's a really tough HD cam. It's a really low ISO. So it requires a lot of light. And we didn't even have a generator because that leaked gasoline and we had to evacuate our set for the first few days.
Forgot about that.
Yeah. But no, anyway, I'm trying to get up to this cabin in Big Bear up in California there. And I get a call from the producer who's like, I'm going to be late. We're not going to get there with the RV. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, I'm on the news right now. The RV that I rented blew up on the 405. I guess it caught on fire. I pulled it over, and then the tree next to me went on fire when it blew up. The whole fire department's here. And, you know, the film was shot with a very limited budget, and I mean limited. And, you know, that most of the budget, I believe, went to that
the
fire.
RV.
The RV, I believe.
It was a good car. Good RV.
It was an RV. And then the other one we got one. You remember when we finally got an RV, and it was actually a smaller one, a diesel thing, it had no heat, and it was snowing while we were filming. So no one even used it to stay in. And it wouldn't fit in the driveway of the cabin that we had. So, of course, we got evicted from another location because the RV was being taken up in the road. So we had to secretly finish the film relatively quickly. I'm sure Christian remembers in one swift night, a few months later, showing in and grabbing the one-night pickup about 4 a.m.
Wait, when was the time the neighbors thought we were doing a porn film?
Time he got evicted because the RV was in the street.
They thought we were doing porn.
It wasn't the neighbors. It was actually...
The owner's son.
The owner's.
Oh.
Came up to me, actually. The owner's son came up to me personally and said... And I quote, "Are you guys making a porn here?" And when I said no, there was like this deep sigh of disappointment. I'm sorry, but no, we're not, you know, making porn. I'm very apologetic, you know. And unfortunately on Riot, I got thrown into the producer seat more than I ever bargained for or wanted to. So questions like that weren't uncommon.
Right.
Yeah, so Megan's a very good negotiator. But no, the film actually surprisingly came out of all the films I've directed. I've directed 5 features, and that one came out to me to be the best picture. And another one I directed, I actually haven't seen the final cut on yet, Sigma Die, because I know the producer had it, which I guess just he's still tweaking it or something, because I actually never saw the cut of that. So, I mean, for all I know, that blows this away, but for now, I'm actually really happy with that. And Christian knows me. I'm a pretty hard on myself. So
mm-hmm.
If I say that I'm pretty happy with it, that means I think it's at least a D minus or a D. So that's a glowing recommendation from me on my own work.
At least it's not a Z.
Yeah.
Right.
But,
we're proud of it.
What is it with Sigma Die? You said that it's the producers have it, and are you expecting to have see it cut when it's done?
I don't know. He called me a few months ago. There was a little we had a disagreement on the direction the film should take in post production, and at that point in time, the best interest for everyone involved with the picture was to get the best possible product out there. So, you know, I did everything I could. Megan was a co-producer on that film as well. She located a lot of music to use and that I had in my edit. And he went to some other editors, I guess, and put it together. And I'm not sure exactly what he's gotten for distribution yet. Like I said, it could be killer. You know, I'm not sure. I do know that the film was a lot of fun. It had Reggie Bannister and Brink Stevens and, again, Joe Estevez, who, like I said, it used before in Scary Tales 2. Had a lot of really attractive girls. It was a spoof of the Slumber Party Massacre type of movies from the 80s, and I think the producers just wanted to be a little bit more American Pie than 80s retro, so that's where it came in.
Yeah, I've seen parts of it, and it looks, from what I've seen, it looks awesome, so.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, you know, so. Hopefully I got my hands on a cut soon, just so I could take a look and give it the old.
So it definitely looks different than what you expected?
I don't know.
Like, I mean, you saw the, the trailer, right?
I did finally see the trailer. Yeah, it went up on MySpace. My trailer was a little different. It was more of a horror feature and was a little bit more story-oriented. I think they went more for a party film with no, you know.
I think they were thinking more National Lampoon than anything else.
Yeah, and I was thinking, like I said, Sorority House Massacre or Slumber Party Massacre as a performance film. So
where it was more serious, but still had a little comedy to it.
Campy, but all the jokes in there were plays on those scripts. So if you've actually seen those films, there's a lot of in-jokes and direct lines that were removed. I was actually borrowing and kind of homaging a lot of their edits with a cut. And I don't know if the producer actually understood that because I don't think he'd actually seen those films. So, you know, that's just part of the business. You know, I mean, I was just happy to have the experience to direct a film like that. It had a fairly healthy budget by the time it was done, I believe. So it should look good, you know, I hope. I'm praying, you know, but I talked to a distributor that had seen it and said that he thought it was pretty good, and he's a pretty big distributor, so that was about a month ago, so I don't know what happened, because I was talking about if they pick it up, doing a commentary for it, so you never know. The producer's in the military, so he goes here and there, so he's kind of disappeared.
He's elusive.
He is. Crazy guy.
So you're still doing the editing for Reunion of Terror right now, right?
Yeah, it's edited. It's done. I mean, it's out there in L.A., and I know that they've had Spring Break Master for a while, and I think what they're trying to do is put them together in a package, and Spring Break Master had Linnea Quigley in it, as well as Reggie Bannister. Again.
What was she like to work with?
Oh, Linnea was great. She actually met her before the shoot, because someone I was actually staying with at the time was very, very close with her, and she used to just hang out, come by out there in Illinois. So she's a really, really nice lady. She was a sweetheart, and when she left, she actually wrote me a really, really sweet note that I found a few days after the shoot, and it was something to the extent of, had a blast, would love to work with you guys again, take care, sweetie. You know, she was an adamant professional.
Oh, Linnea was awesome.
Yeah, she's a very, very nice lady. So, you know, it was fun. But, you know, Christian, like I said, out of everyone I've used, like, I always try to recommend Christian. So I'm hoping
Michael, thank you.
No, absolutely. The whole point I was having Christian call in, I'm like, you know, I got to plug you, dude. Because Christian put up with a lot. I mean, there were mornings where he'd show up at, what, like 5 a.m. to borrow a shot at the general store?
We got it, though. That's all that matters.
Yeah, we had to borrow a quick shot.
Right, we got it.
For our movies.
Once in a while, when the permits don't come through and there's some clerical errors down at the courthouse, you got to borrow a shot, you know?
Right. We sure did.
So there's a few borrowed shots in there. I think, well, the city of Los Angeles is so difficult to film in, I believe the trees there are copyrighted. So you got to be real careful in what you film, you know? So
you need a permit to breathe.
You need a permit to walk in L.A.?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you do, yeah, but out there now they've got a law, you know, like there's more laws out there than there are people, and let me tell you, there's a lot of people, judging by the 405, so.
We don't know because Patrick shut down the 405, so.
Right, that's right, yeah, so people will always remember.
During rush hour, I might add.
Yeah.
Yes, it was during rush hour, that's right.
Yeah.
How did you guys get away with shutting down, like places and everything?
We got away with it by starting a giant fire. The
while the cops were dealing with that, we go shoot.
They didn't see that. We go shoot real quick. We were trying to do like the Vanilla Sky shutting down Times Square thing. So we thought, you know, if we can blow up the 405, when they start clearing the wreckage, there'll be a good space for us to film for about 30, 40 minutes while they're dealing with the people who are burning alive. So, you know, filmmaking, is a very, tough art. And sometimes... as a filmmaker, you know, you have to kill people to get your shot. And I think Patrick was trying to do that. So, didn't work.
That sounds very like Ed Woody type stuff. You know, just get in there, you know, do one take, get out.
Well, you know, the combined budgets between all the films were around $250,000. So it was kind of, and Sigma Dai was shot in numerous states. We shot it in Michigan and Iowa, Illinois, Los Angeles, so... I mean, we were stretching out our money here and there.
So, yes, you're right. It's very Ed Wood-like, trust me.
Right. Yeah, well, hopefully the end result on a few of the pictures is better. But, yeah, I'm hoping, Christian.
I expect people to throw things at us. So
They are, definitely.
Yeah.
Christian
I always
knows.
Sit Christian, up behind my back. You know, I've
Christian has stayed up with us many a night because on a Mike Hoffman shoot, you don't sleep.
No,
Christian has seen a lot of the carnage, you know, firsthand. I mean, he's always been an intricate part of our little group, you know, helping us when we, you know, didn't have, you know, things like most sets have, you know, like people to carry things or anything like that. So,
right, or handbags or flags or
seats. Well, yeah, you know, we didn't have things like equipment, you know, sometimes.
Sometimes we had it, though. I mean, when we had equipment, it was great. But, you know, like on Sigma Dai, we had a defective dolly that just didn't want to work that we rented. And I was like, this is not going to work. You put more than 40 pounds on it, and the wheels would, like, smash in.
Hey, I think we've gotten good at improvising.
Yes. Yeah, we
definitely
have.
That's what it's all about, though. That's what makes
it
so cool.
That's the thing about these kind of fast-paced shoots. But the thing is, like I said, there's a lot of people who were involved with the films that I always want to give a giant shout-out to and thank because, I mean, a lot of people weren't being paid that much or anything at all, you know, like some of us. And
like Hoffman's CRL.
Right.
He's giving a shout out.
You guys, and you know, and the thing is, Christian was the one who's been in all your movies, so the one who's put up with the most of your.
But Christian's right. He's probably got some stories I'm completely unaware with because I'm completely in a different world when I'm making a film. It's the world of no sleep and eternal.
Actually, Michael, you are more aware of what's going on with everyone than I am. You're always like, oh, you didn't hear about so-and-so? They had sex with so-and-so. did I say that out loud? Check, please.
Okay. Well, you know, now tomorrow.
Oh, but I will. The stories, you definitely knew what was going on. I was probably dazed and confused half the time. Wait a second. That's how I live my life today anyway.
Do you have any other, like, stories, Christian, like, involving the production of any of the
movies? There really are a lot. I'm trying to think of specifics. First of all, the cast, when you all get together, that's kind of like a big issue, you know, of who's, what's happening with who. But I think the best time that we had was out in Big Bear. We were stuck in the cabin, and we had shot issues or whatever it was, but... we were just all hanging out and just having a good time. Well, I think there was an astrology book, and we read each other's charts, something like that. It's never happened to me before or after. I'm not really an astrologer, but I'll tell you what, it was fun at the time. But, no, we had a good time out there. It was kind of like a creepy cabin. But it was fun. We got through it. There were some challenges out there. We had some DP problems. But Megan and Mike did a good job of smoothing it over, and we got through it.
Aw, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah,
by the way, I just want to add this, that Megan and Michael, you guys are like yin and yang, and thank God you guys are a couple because you balance each other out.
Well, that's what I do, just to let you know, is I come on and infuriate everyone, generally, for a small amount of time. Then Megan smooths it over, and then most of the time, the half of the time, I was right about something I said in there. And
right.
They come back and like, oh God, Mike was right about that. Now I was wrong about 90% of the other stuff.
Oh, hold on, we got another caller.
Oh, we
all right.
Yeah, hold on. 239, you should be on.
Hey, hello? Mike, Pete.
Oh, it's Pete. This is Peter Duggan, who worked with Christian. Knows Pete. He was on Sigma Di and Spring Break, and avoided rot because he knew better.
Pete, what's up? How you doing?
Holy word.
Hey, man, what's up?
Not much.
So you did you did Foley work on the movies or?
I did Foley work on Rot. Did some audio work on Sigma Di and was sound assist on Spring Break Massacre.
Oh wow!
Yeah, Pete's a pretty busy guy. And before you go tonight, Chris, because I know you're probably kind of busy, but you got to hear this great story about our Foley session at a cabin down here in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, in Rot, you know, there's a scene where you're thrown into that fabulous wall. There's some of it in the trailer.
Right.
At the creepy cabin at the end there. Well, we didn't have real good audio because, if you remember, the guy that did Beetlejuice that came out that night or whatever fell asleep or whatever in his cart. The guy that was running the reel-to-reel Nagra.
Right.
Okay. So we decided to rent a very identical cabin, Pete. Do you recall this?
Yes, I do.
We rented a very identical cabin.
Unfortunately, the wall wasn't quite as good, but...
No, the wall was not quite as good. Because I'm like, all right, Pete's booming. We're matching up the shot. I'm like, go ahead. And we had another Foley individual there helping us out, too, or kind of recreating sound effects. So I'm like, push me into the wall, and I'll recreate Christian's bang. And, you know, two times it blew a little, but we got it right the third time.
Hold on. Let Pete tell the rest of the story.
Yeah, I was...
Well, anyway, it's like I had been working... I worked with Mike on a number of hellish films. And, you know, we had plenty of time... You know, what the hell, may as well, you know, have some fun with it. Rob throws Mike against the wall the first time. I tell him it clips. Rob throws Mike against the wall another time. I tell him, sorry, we had bad place on that, we've got to do it again. Rob throws Mike into the wall again, and he then goes through the wall.
Yeah.
And we had the camera up and recording throughout this, and it was funny
to
see it on set. Because we all just stop and put our hand over our mouth, and we're just all in awe.
And the wall was so weak in the cabin, I had no idea I went through it. Like on the actual tape.
Yeah, you had no idea. You had no idea. And then I think it was Meg just points, and you're like, what? Then you freaked out. You thought it was going to cost us $1,500 to get it fixed. What was it?
$25. Well, $25 plus a $25 cleanup.
I thought you decided to burn the cabin down. Then that way it would cover the evidence.
Well, you know, there was like, if you're going to take...
This elaborate escape plan, which we were going to, like, try to make it look like he slipped on his shoe in the middle of the night or something, and it's like, dude, just
and
tell
it
him.
And it started to work, too, damn it, but it all crumbled. Yeah, we were, like, up all night, we're like, we have to replace a whole wall, oh my God, you know, it was like
yeah, you
a whole...
had this idea in your head that we were going to do it that night, too.
Yeah, I was, like, ready for, like, the early morning escape, and what we were going to do was move the picture frame over this hideous painting that was hanging in the cabin. And we were going to try to cover it up and just figure, you know, they won't move the picture back for a few days. And when they do, who knows, maybe it was us or the next person to figure it out, right?
Yeah, this was the brilliant
plan. The picture was so poorly hung there. It was much too low.
This is why I don't own rental property.
Mike actually left, like, the equivalent of a chalk outline of himself in the wall. Pete and Mike are both like, well, if we move the painting over, I'm like, yeah, except for the big aspirin. Below the painting... Where, you know, the imprint continues, and they're like, oh, no, nobody will see it. I'm like, yeah, that might be a slight problem. So I'm like,
well,
I'll go talk to
the owner when the painting is hanging up from the ground on the wall. Yeah, but we ended up taking a somewhat honest route. We just paid it. But, like, the good news was, like we said, it was that. But that was the kind of shoot that Rot really was. Like, we went out for pickups as well, and I'm sure Christian remembers the one night we had pickups in the woods, which I flew all the way back to L.A. for, paid for myself, went to complete this film, because we had a really, really decent picture. A lot of it came out really well, and there's just some of the gore scenes are just, like, really extremely brutal in the final cut of that film. And I was like, God, we can just tweak this out a little bit, we can just push it to the next level. And what happened tonight? We're out there, if you remember, Christian, the rain started coming and the levee broke down the...
Oh, yeah. It was freezing, too.
Yes. So
who knew the desert was so mysterious? And
then the generator ran out of gas. If, I don't know if you remember that or not, Christian. Were you there for that when the Jenny ran
out? Oh, I'm sure I was. I just blocked it out.
Our sound woman, Sue Willett, who is a wonderful person and worked with us on two out of the three features, and she's a great... Pete, I'm sure you can vouch. Sue Willett
yep,
is an amazing
phenomenal.
Person.
Yeah, she's cool.
Yeah, but she had to turn her headlights on, and we're walking through the woods during this like torrential downpour, waiting for the flood to come from the levee, trying to collect all of our rental gear. We had like 2K lights sitting out there, and like tons of sea stands and stingers and sandbags, and so that was my night pickup scene that was supposed to go into Rot. So you know, independent filmmaking, when you're budgeted for a specific shoot, especially when you have one camera, you know, it's either all got to go your way or, you know, you got to make it work, especially in post. So, you know, and for me, directing these films is a great learning experience, you know. So I always took cliff notes. I studied what I did wrong more than what I did right. And that proves it because I just directed a music video and I probably still did everything wrong. But that shows you that I'm learning how to, like I said, do things
improvise
the wrong way. Yeah, right. Because I figure I'll have like a competent bastard like Pete around me who will make me look good. So, anywho, so I'm probably getting boring as hell. Does someone else want to talk, or am I? Because
Michael, you're not boring, all right?
I mean, these are interesting stories.
They are.
Hmm.
Now, wait a second.
They're
hold
painful
on.
Stories.
Nothing to do with this, real quick. But Megan, since you're staying here with Ryan and I. They told me every room at this hotel we rented had a DVD VHS player. On the phone today, they said, no, we don't have a VHS. Where would you get that from? I'm standing right here, okay, and they're renting VHS movies for the rooms at the kiosk. Those lying bastards.
Nice. Well, it's to go along with the tub, I'm telling you.
Wait.
Oh, hold on.
Why do you want to rent VHS
anyway?
Oh, Ryan was a sound... Yeah, Ryan did a lot. He's helping us with some sound mixing on the film, but he did a lot of the score with Joseph Butera as well. So that's over at Bon Jovi Entertainment here in Florida and Avalon Records. Is Ryan there?
Hey,
here.
Why do you want to rent VHS anyways?
Dude, the best movies are on VHS. You can't find the horror classics on DVD. They're forgotten.
They are?
Yes. Yes, they are, especially trashy 70s and 80s movies.
Unless tell me Reunion of Terror is on DVD.
It's on... I actually Betamax for now, but with the producers figure if we can get the budget up over.
Laserdisc.
And Laserdisc. We got Laserdisc.
Yeah, I'm hoping you could upgrade to that, but I'll keep my fingers crossed.
What's up, Ryan? What did you want to add in here?
I don't know. I was handed the phone. Is there a question for me?
Well, now this is getting absolutely...
Where do babies come from?
Where do babies come from? I don't know. I didn't
tend
go to
school. Out whenever Courtney Love does the dishes and spreads her legs. I don't know. No, that was bad. Can we erase that?
Sorry. That'll be on here for a while.
Great. All right. I bought beers just because I figured I was on vacation. Just let everyone know I'm actually on vacation this week, which anyone that knows me will tell you this very rarely happens for me. So
vacation?
Yeah, vacation.
What is that, another movie?
Mike's like, yeah. That's another slave... Film slash TV.
Vacation of Terror. It's called Vought.
Is it going to be life imitating art, imitating life?
Right. Their hotel room will start on fire and their bathtub will be their only retreat.
And if one of our DPs was there, they'd probably blow out the fire, so we'd have to reshoot. They'd have to reshoot my untimely death. It didn't come out, Mike. We're sorry. My F-stop was a little open. Forgot the ND filters.
But he'll get a great crane shot afterwards.
Oh, and we should mention one more thing, too, about Rock, was the amazing job a lot of people have done on that film is because a lot of it, the sound was done in post-production because we had a sound mixer that didn't do a, we won't name names, but Superglow did a wonderful job. But there was someone else who actually used really none of you know, that intended low-budget movie was the generator was loud, and, you know, when you're in a limited budget, limited time, we come back and we're like, uh-oh, the sound is bad because I don't know what he did to it, Pete. You said you thought you had an idea. Pete's laughing. Pete's good at
audio. Mike, did you ask if you could have that beer?
No, I just came in the room actually and took a beer out, but yeah. No, I did not.
Hey, I thought of CROT, CROT, Car Rental of Terror. Now, we can get into the details, but I prefer not to do it over the phone. Basically, hello?
Oh, yeah.
We're all here.
No, we're listening. I'm curious. I was going to, Patrick might be interested in this.
Right.
Oh, God, the RV.
You only need $100,000, and I can get it off the ground.
Okay. Only 100 grand?
That's it. That's it.
Well, you know, Patrick might be able to get that for you.
All right.
So,
I'll call him.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, actually, I don't know. I might have to, you know what, only if we can get the producer Sigma Dai on there to oversee my directing. Because that
phenomenal.
Would be a great
team. Best in the world. Was there a point where you tried to threatened to kill us?
Who was that? What are you talking about?
Of course, I'll be the lead on that one, right, Michael?
No, I don't know. Yeah, nobody threatened.
Well, lots of people threatened to kill Mike. It's just part of
the. He threatened to kill me too, though.
Oh,
Pete, it's just gonna happen. You're around Mike. It's kind of a by proxy thing.
Yeah, I think he was joking, dude. No, but for real. Like,
I handed Ryan the phone. I take it he didn't say much. Ryan Copps, did you tell him? What Ryan did, he's a little shy.
Yeah, no, Ryan did a lot of the score for Rotten. It's an amazing, amazing musical score. And he also sat in and did a lot of the Sigma Dai score as well. That's
yeah, it sounds really good.
Well, if you watch the music video for Decomposure, he's the keyboardist for the band. And that's
actually,
the music
yeah,
video that Mike
I did
shot.
Direct a music video recently for a song called Faking the Death Wish. So,
Oh, yeah, that looks good. I just saw that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, we shot that.
It's on MySpace. It's on
cool.
YouTube.
Cool.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, it looked pretty good. I saw that, too.
Oh, you did? Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah. So, yeah, we shot that in HD down here, and it was a relatively fast shoot because Pete worked on it. Pete was.
I would say so. We shot it in, 12 hours? 10
yeah,
hours?
We shot the whole video, one camera again, in somewhere between 10 and 12 hours. So, it was a little challenging, and I had cut it within about, I think, we wrapped it Sunday night by what
the whole
was it?
Cut within 2 days, pretty much.
Yeah, Monday morning, and then Tuesday night, I had an edit. I was like, here you go. I went through the 4 hours of footage. You know, so...
Yeah, Mike and Pete sat there forever, and I had to listen... As much as I like the song, I had to listen to it about, I don't know, 400 times.
At least.
At least. I don't think I can listen to it anymore.
You're not faking the death wish now.
The whole thing.
No,
you really want
the death wish after that.
Yeah. But I guess it is, I actually really enjoy this, and I'm hoping, like, anyone out there that's listening to this broadcast, I mean... As many challenges and struggles as there have been, and as many friends as I've made, and I'm sure as many enemies. I'm sure there's a few, you know. At this time, Bin Laden would probably welcome me with open arms compared to some of the producers I work with. But, it's worth it just to get out there and experience it, and I'm very, very appreciative of the opportunity I was given to learn how the film, community exists outside of my sets, because, I mean... When I was, starting these films directing, 2 years ago, I was 24 years old. I had just done some no-budget stuff, hadn't worked on a lot of professional sets. And that's what we're always joking and saying I infuriate people, but a lot of my things are in my head because I'm a general shooter editor. And I drive DPs nuts because I don't use specific industry terms that these people who are seasoned veterans have heard for 25 years. And, it's just funny to see how... I obviously am doing that the wrong way, so I'm learning. And it's also funny to see how they're, at the same time while I'm doing things wrong, they're unable to overcome what they're traditionally used to try to work with me, and it becomes a one-on-one thing. And basically, I took all that and I pushed it towards, the next picture I do, I think it's going to be, amazing. And out of this, I think we did get one really amazing films and a couple really fun, campy, schlocky throwback horror movies that should be a blast with lots of nudity, lots of excessive gore. So, anyone out there thinking about making a film, I just totally would recommend doing it. If you want to move to the next level, always urge people who are into this to come together and just work together toward one common goal. And that's always got to be the main idea, is one common goal before you start. You know, you don't want a producer thinking one thing but a director thinking something else, or else you end up like Harvey Scissorhands over there, right, at Miramax, who recuts Martin Scorsese's picture. I think that's Pete's favorite producer, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
He loves his editor of Kings of New York.
He loves no one more than Klaus Kinski. I'm sorry.
Klaus Kinski and Harvey Fine. Yeah, Harvey Weinstein and Klaus Kinski worked together. Pete would have been in heaven back then. Poor Klaus is dead.
Poor Klaus.
Poor Klaus.
Great actor.
Oh, yeah.
Good actor.
Brilliant. Anybody who disagrees has not seen any Herzog films.
Hmm. Pete's all serious here. Come on, man. But, no, I don't know. I just want to hope everybody out there isn't being discouraged in any way, because I've had a lot of life experiences, a lot of fun, actually. And despite all the hard work, and making films takes time. You got to have patience. To get the film done in post properly and get the audio laid right, find the final edits, figure out exact color corrections to get everything to broadcast spec, and get your sound mixes in there can take, you know, a year, you know, on a limited budget, if you want to do it the right way. Or you can just edit at home on your PC and just say, screw it, mix it yourself. But that was the avenue that we didn't want to take on these, you know. Of course, they probably end up looking like we did that anyway. Knowing that since I did something to do, well, nobody's laughing at me. I'll stop talking.
I'm laughing.
And yeah, a silence
inside.
Fills the air.
I mean,
yes. I feel like the Ted Danson when he came out in blackface that time, and the whole place went silent.
No, I mean, I was listening. Yeah. I was, you know.
Despite rain, there's actually tumbleweeds going by my hotel room in Florida.
But anyway, so
he's trying to save me. Go ahead, yes.
Well, I was gonna
let's have a heckler.
What?
No.
I was gonna say, like, there's a lot of things that people want to know about these movies, because like I found out through them through I think I was looking up Linnea Quigley and saw she was in you know, Spring Break Massacre. Was that it?
Yeah,
she was
in Spring Break.
Yeah, so I found out about that you had done like 3 slasher movies like this year, basically is what they were saying.
Yeah, no, and that's true. It was all we shot them all back to back to back, and I'd get off one and basically I had like my schedule was so ridiculous. If I gave it to you, you'd be like, how did I live? I don't know. But I live in Florida, and at the time I went up to Illinois and made Spring Break. We wrapped it in October of 2005. Came back to Florida, put together a rough cut. They got some ADR that was needed. That was around, God, we're getting ADR for that in January, but when I was out there doing ADR, I was scouting locations for Rot. Rot was shot for about 9 days, but over almost a one-month period. So I was out in L.A. for between February and late April back and forth doing that movie. I came out for 2 weeks before, and then was out there for about a month for the shoot because it got staggered because of location issues and weather issues, snowing, and all kinds of issues. And then, I came back to Florida and was starting to cut together Rot and trying to finish up Spring Break, and we wanted to get some pickup shots for Spring Break while I was finishing Rot, and we realized that Rot also needed some ADR for some sound work and could use some additional shots. So Rot was the easy choice because everybody lived in L.A., so I went back into the pickups on that film. Came back, and right when I was getting it done, they still hadn't gotten the ADR yet for the whole film, and I got hired to direct Sigma Dai. So then I produced that and directed it. I was a co-producer and put that together from, God, that September, and we shot it through.
Ended up getting back, like, the end of October, early October.
Yeah, or something. Or so. Actually, yeah, we shot that.
In late October.
So, and actually went to L.A., we came back right, what was it, before Halloween? I remember when I went to
Halloween. Yeah, it was like 2 days before.
Okay, right. So then I was cutting that and ended up out at Sundance with the producer. And then at that time I had gotten the ADR delivered to me, so I was going to start to remaster Rot. And then we decided that he was going to finish the film and take it a little different direction than I wanted. So we were cool with that, and he kind of took it his way. And I went back to work on Rot at the same time, turn in Spring Break. And that's that. So that's been my last 2 years, like a little less than 2 years, but it's a lot to do when you're, like, production and post-production, you know? So it was kind of busy, I'll put it that way. Not to mention that these films were shot in all completely different states, and we ended up Michigan and everywhere else you can think of. So I lived out of a suitcase. and that's why I'm here to relax. But I had to do that quick music video just to make sure that I didn't forget what it's like to not sleep for a few days in a row. Always like to remind myself.
Are you thinking about doing another, like, slasher movie anytime soon?
Slasher film? I don't know about. I'm recutting a film vacation. I'm actually recutting a film as well, like helping with the final edit on a film that we try to doctor up a little bit down here called Hogzilla. And Pete did sound on that. It was a little bit.
There's boom operator on that one.
Yeah. And it was Pete worked on that, and I was not part of the shoot, but actually they brought me in post because somehow they heard some kind of good word of mouth about me. So I'm wondering who was talking sarcastically, but either way they understood it and hired me. So now I'm helping them finish that up, and hopefully they can get this out by November. I'm hoping for them. And the guys who are doing that were also talking to me a little bit about something else, too, which would be a possibility. I'm not sure exactly what, maybe co-directing or being in charge of kind of camera department as well, like for action scenes and things on a horror feature that they're talking about doing next year, early in February. But I actually can't go into too many details on that right now. But, you know, you never know. I could actually be back in the seat, but we'll see. Because in this industry, nothing is final, you know, until you get the paper in your hand and the check from the investor, you know. So that's what I've learned anyway.
So. Well, that's a good lesson. You know, there's a lot of, I'm sure you guys got a lot of stories, like, you know, kind of like, you know, battle stories about everything that you guys haven't even gone into yet.
Oh, yeah.
Finding money the first
time. To say the least.
I don't think there's enough beer in this room for stories quite like that.
I know, and I've only had 3 sips of a beer since I've been on the phone, and I'm already opening up, so this could turn into a psychiatric session.
Uh-oh.
You could feel like a therapist for Mike at the end of this, trust me.
Christian, I could talk about the nightmares I have from editing the films and seeing you repeatedly over and over. For 2 years, Christian doesn't realize this. He doesn't talk to me frequently, but Christian's actually been a big part of my life, sweetie, so thank you, hon. Thank you.
Sure. All the editing, yes.
That's
Christian,
right.
I've seen quite a bit of you.
Right. What about my ass cheeks? Do you have a comment about those?
Spring
break.
Oh, Christian does bear a lot in spring break. That's right. He does show quite a bit.
I think everyone I've shown my buttocks.
Yeah, you do real quick at the football scene over there in Sigma Dot.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, wait, there's another caller calling in.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking 310, you should be on. Hello?
Hello, John Shumsky calling.
John.
Hey, John.
Yay.
Shumsky.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
were you the was it the park ranger or something in the movie? Or?
Game warden.
Game warden. That's
game
right.
Warden
game warden.
Patrick.
A perverted game warden is what he was.
Yeah.
John's got his favorite scene in there. We won't give away the joke, but John, when he first saw the screener of the film a while ago, like his scenes, like a year ago, I remember John calling me up going, Mike, can't you just cut that one part out? You know, I don't want to give away the joke.
No.
John, we should talk to Don. I mean, John's had an interesting career. You've been on, what, the Tonight Show before and played some sports? And
that might be, Michael, you got to remember, I'm in a taxi cab, so I can barely hear you guys. So I'm trying to. Did you say interesting career?
Yeah,
yes.
I mean, you were before you were doing our stuff too, and acting again here. You were like on the Tonight Show, right? A couple times, or
oh yeah, I used to do some. Jay Leno was a fellow Boston guy, and a couple of times they'd call me in to do some skits. I think the first time I was in there, I wheeled Charlton Heston out on a chariot. The second time, I was a car dealer in Vegas, kind of on the up and up. But I took takes on the side, so that was another one of our skits there with Jay. But, and then there was the Briscoe County, you know, the scene with Dynamite Sullivan back in with Bruce Campbell there. Michael, you remember that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yep.
Back in the day.
Show. Yeah, I was a big fan of that show when I was growing up, too. You know, I love Bruce Campbell, so I used to watch that religiously. But, didn't you play hockey as well, John?
Absolutely, absolutely. I grew up in the Boston area, played all through high school and college, drafted by the St. Louis Blues, you know, went to training camp, unfortunately broke my ankle 2 weeks into it, and then happened to latch on with a career with the major brewer, Anheuser-Busch, and stayed there for a few years after that.
Yeah, let's hear for Anheuser-Busch.
There's a little plug right there.
Actually, I live in the in one of the breweries, like right by one of the breweries in Williamsburg. So,
you live in the brewery?
No, not in the brewery. I don't live in
a whole other level. Congrats to you.
John, after these films, I've been thinking about moving into a brewery.
You need it after those.
Yeah, I might. No, but John actually has been a hell of a character actor in my films, and that's the one thing is when before we did Sigma Die, that the producer on that film actually was watching Spring Break and took one look at John. He's like, okay, well, we're getting that guy for sure. I don't care. We're going to use him. He's awesome. And everyone's had that reaction. So I think, John, you've added a lot of class to the films because John is definitely a more classically trained actor than I'm used to working with. You've studied with, well, didn't you study with the Masters right out in New York, didn't you? Or?
Absolutely. And then out here in Los Angeles with the Beverly Hills Playhouse and actually studied with Milton Caselas for a couple of years at the Playhouse, and it was he's like working I don't know how many of your audience are football fans, but Milton is like a Mike Ditka. He's the perfect guy for my personality, and you know, he went in and he laid the heavy hand down, and is no coddling and no emotion, emotional baloney when you walk into class every night. It's you're strictly here to do scenes and learn how to be a trained actor, and if you can't handle it, then, you know, you go down to the lesser classes. But, no, I studied with Milton for a few years out here, and that's basically where I honed my craft, and I learned, you know, everything I know today.
Wow.
Yeah, and it shows, because the one thing I've always said about John is, I mean, John knows, like I said, we shoot a lot of times one camera, unlimited schedules, we get behind, lighting takes a long time, and we'll run through scenes rather quickly and get limited coverage, and I'm always so happy when John's in a scene because he makes this incredible eye line that's very commanding, and I know I've told you that before. And John, it's a pleasure to cut your scenes because I can always go back and hold out your expression. So it's
nice.
Always a lot of fun to work with your footage. Because,
hey,
you know,
how come you haven't said that to me before?
I mean, I'll be as polite as I can. I don't think you're complete shit because I've used you in three movies.
You son of a beep.
Christian, I just love you when you read my, you know, my scripts and my script revisions. I do love it when you actually read them. You know.
Yeah, halfway through Rock, like, so what is ending?
Hey.
Like halfway through shooting.
Right, we can change it as we go along.
Yeah, I'm waiting for some changes. There's no need to read the whole thing.
Well, no.
Right.
On Spring Break, though, there was a problem. We realized the first night of shooting that some people had only received the original copy of the script, and some people had received the revised script. So, what was it? One of the big scenes with the girls in the living room, I'm noticing some interesting dialogue exchanges. I'm like, hey, wait a minute. I remember right, uh-oh. And then there was a little bit of a delay when everyone's like, oh, yeah, we never got that. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
We kind of had, that was, I remember that, we kind of ad-libbed that, remember?
Yes.
We had
a lot of help from the actors ad-libbing. Thank God.
Yeah,
we had, and we kind of like in all the films, we kind of if there was a scene that was kind of not fitting, we all kind of collaborated in how to make it funny and camp because we all knew the genre, and we all knew which direction these films wanted to go to. That's the fun part. A lot of times about doing independent is there's not so much straightforward script supervision person there telling you exactly what your line has to be. You can kind of go with the flow. And I can remember so many times we did that, but in Reunion of Terror, we did that quite a few times because, you know, the late nights and the early mornings and sometimes
morning.
Things didn't sound right.
That is. I just remember it being one long day by the end of.
Well, that's John's way. That's John's way of saying that my script supervising skills were less than stellar.
Actually, it's the opposite. It was perfect. It's like if you feel good with it, go with it.
Oh, yeah, thanks, John.
That's
you know?
My motto in life.
And that was like the whole thing. I don't know. It's like that's the one thing is as many like I said, as many negative experiences there were just so many positives when I look back. Everything in life, right? Especially for me as a young director who just started out the last few years, really doing bigger films, but you know, it just was a great learning experience to see what we can't get away with and learn how to grow. And you know, and so I wouldn't actually trade any of this in, you know. And I even told John that one day on the phone. I was like, you know, actually I'm glad I did these. Everything that's happened to me throughout the course of 2 years has been a wonderful way to learn and grow in the industry, you know, and you know, there's going to be successes and failures in my work, and I just thank everyone on the phone here for hanging with me just to get these things to completion, you know. As a young director saying, without you guys, especially the ones on the phone, I probably would not have any kind of a film done, so thank you very much.
Yeah, big thanks. Big thanks for me, too, guys.
Well,
seriously.
Well, you know, all props to the director, Michael. I mean, This man is the hardest working director that I've ever seen. I mean, he'll literally not sleep the entire night just to get a shot correctly, and then when you wake up in the morning and you find all the other actors are having breakfast and there's Michael still cutting the scenes from the night before. I mean, that just shows his intensity and want to do things the right way. So all props to Michael on that.
And hopefully, like, in the next year or so, like Jonathan here was talking about, maybe me doing another film if I do. Hopefully it's all up to me getting a slightly bigger budget to work with and more individuals surrounding me and keep, you know, people on the staff, like a first AD,
right.
you know, more people helping with continuity, script soups, a second unit for photography, and someone else to pick up the establishing shots and B-roll. I mean, just think
right.
Remember,
staff
Christian,
there.
Christian, if I write
department.
It, you read it.
Right. You know what I will add, too? When I first started doing these, somebody was like, what do you think? You think this is so-and-so? And I was like, Michael has got such a passion for it, and Megan, you do, too. And that passion, it doesn't matter whether the movie gets thrown in the garbage. You'll just continue to do it because that's what you guys love to do. And I could see that from the beginning, and that's why I've stuck it up.
And, you know, like I said to everyone here, too, I mean, I'm 26 years old, I mean, so hopefully it should be up at this point, you know, it shouldn't
right.
go down, but God knows that I don't want to say that, because, so I'll knock on a big wall right now.
It's nothing but big digits from here on out.
Oh, it's just, you know, little steps, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, a lot of times the directors that have connections and nepotism in Hollywood have a kind of that silver spoon attitude, whereas guys like you and Megan and you just work so hard at making the project happen. I think it's more tasty at the end because we work with smaller budgets and we work with actors that are good, not necessarily the best, but hardworking people who just show up for work every day. I think that's you know, part of the fun of doing films like this. You agree?
No, absolutely. And on a limited budget, you know, whether or not every scene is great, the good thing about all these films that I think that everybody will agree on is there's actually a lot of good stuff in each film for considering the budget. I mean, there's some things I'd like, obviously, to be better or bigger or more expanded upon. I mean, but every
well, the one thing I can say real quick, not to interrupt you, but when you see Rod, you got to watch John's expression every time he goes after Christian, because every exchange they have gets meaner and meaner, and the two of you played off of each other so well, and we've shown it to people, you know, through the editing process. They're like, oh my God, we thought that guy was going to kill him.
Right.
It's like, yeah, every scene, it
and
gets you know, progressively...
John's eye line again. Yeah.
Yeah, it's John's eye line, and it's Christian's innocent face like, oh my God, this guy's totally just going to kill me right here.
And Christian does such a fantastic job at playing it off. It's
oh,
like
yeah.
he's constantly looking at me like, who's this big knucklehead?
Yeah,
you
man.
Know, and he just plays it off. But the look when I play with Christian, it's almost like, here's this big knucklehead, but if he wants to, he could arrest me and throw me in jail at any second.
Yeah,
well, I tease Christian about the script, but it's so funny. Christian gets into character, and he starts saying, like, what's on his mind, and I swear, Christian, some of your little ad-libs, your little throw-ins there,
oh my God,
people are
yeah.
cracking up. They're like, did he just say what I think he said? I mean, some of it's, like, so wholly, like, shocking, inappropriate, like, you know, the scene with, you know, Celia, the hitchhiker, and she's telling you the sob story.
Right.
She's telling you this whole thing about her life, you know, summed up in pretty much one sentence, and you look over at her, And I swear to God, you just tear apart. And I'm like, I'm looking at the script going, I didn't write that, but oh my God, that's great.
It's almost like it goes over his head a little bit. You know, because he doesn't want to hear that. He's on to the next thought already.
Yeah, exactly. You're very, very progressive thinking when it comes to this. But yeah, Christian definitely got like the whole comedic thing like down pat. Like he'll throw a line out there, and I'm sitting there going, he did not just say that. Did he just say that? Yeah,
and you know what's funny is even though we're shooting with one camera a lot of times, Christian's reactions are always very similar, so I'm able to use like an ad lib here and there and match it back to like a wide angle or a medium shot, you know, that he had in the close up. And
I'm consistent.
He's a consistent ad libber, if that makes sense.
And you know what? He looks great in a toga.
Yes. Yes.
You look great in the park ranger uniform.
I remember when we were doing the original shoot. This I do remember. We were doing the original shoot. We're in the desert. It was freezing cold. And John's like, oh, my God, I wish this jacket was thicker. You know, and we're just sitting there shivering that night doing the final scene with that. You're a little embarrassed about there, John. And then we go back up for pickups, and it's all of a sudden like July or early August. And it's about 110 degrees in Soledad Canyon. And John's like, oh, my God, I wish I didn't have to wear this jacket. It's killing me. John couldn't win with the green jacket there, Christian.
No, but Michael was insisting the character keep that jacket on. You need, because that's his only fallback as a park ranger. Once I take that jacket off, my kind of safety net, if you would, it leaves me. Now I just, that badge is gone. And, you know, it's just me and that big gun. So
it was a truck that started on fire. Remember?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Your pride and joy.
It's funny if they could have seen.
No, it's every time Patrick is near a vehicle. We've all decided that Patrick, as much as we love him, is not allowed near any vehicle.
Wait. And I'm not saying this in any rude way toward Patrick. I love the guy, and anyone that knows him will hopefully laugh about this. So this is a private joke. Don't repeat what this is about. Fire in general is bad with Patrick.
Right.
Fire is bad.
Patrick, are you still here, or?
Yeah. You can't drive.
No. That blew up in the 405, the RV. There was a truck, and then there was another film that we won't even discuss that had a slight explosion that was unplanned. I wasn't involved with that one, thankfully.
Right.
Fire tends to follow Patrick, so he might put gasoline in his pockets. I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
It's a spontaneous problem, yeah.
Spontaneous combustion.
His nickname was
Patrick.
Perry.
Because was Patrick Mr. California?
Yes.
I think he was. So when I'm doing Spring Break, and obviously a director-producer thing, there's going to be arguments. I mean, heated arguments and exchanges in this industry are very common because we're all very passionate about producers generally getting things done on time, and directors always want something, and sometimes what I want may be ridiculous or too long, you know. So there was a heated exchange between Patrick and myself on Spring Break, and I remember I got in his face for about 3 seconds and realized that's right, this is Mr. California. And his arms are as big as telephone poles.
I was like, play the telephone pole, man.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, Patrick was
like,
Mr.
I should better stop
this,
right. Yeah, so, you know, but, yeah, I tried to get a hold of Patrick to call in tonight. He was all excited about the show, but he's been very busy with some personal matters. So, but I think he would have been great to have on here, but he's kind of been in.
Yeah, Patrick would have been the quiet man, I think. So.
Oh, yeah.
He would have probably just sat there and insulted me and said, I don't know why.
Yeah. Patrick would have been like, Michael's a very interesting young man, and that's all I'll say.
Absolutely.
Hey, I was going to say, you're absolutely for you, John. See?
So he produced both the, you know, both Reunion Terror and Spring Break?
He did, yes. Patrick was it, and there was also a woman with him named Esther Zad that produced both features. They raised the money, some of his own in her, and was also chipped in toward the end there. But,
and Patrick
was
being our sounding board. Poor Patrick has been there through all the phone calls. Hey, guess what? Guess what just happened? And poor Patrick is just like, okay, whatever, just fix it, please.
And he also had a little small part in Spring Break.
Yeah, he was. I think wasn't he sitting at the bar having a pint?
No, actually, in Spring Break, Patrick
was the prison guard.
The prison guard.
Officer Downs.
Or Warden.
And then in Rot, he learned how to eat on camera.
Yeah, that's right.
The guy sitting at the table in the back.
Well, he's good at eating, as everyone knows.
We're like, Patrick, just pretend like you're sitting there having a meal. And he just, he looks so sad doing it.
And on Spring Break, also in Spring Break, he was filling in, too, for the killer in the film as well. So, you know, I don't want to give too much away, but he did, because our killer can only be there for selected days as well, because that's another place where a lot of our budgets went to, where you'll read and say, oh, the budget wasn't that tiny. And you're like, well, you know, we flew in most of our actors from L.A. to Illinois to shoot them. So there goes a lot of your budget, you know, right there for lodging and airfare and taking care of them while they're out of town for a while. So
especially when we stayed at the Ritz-Carlton.
Now, what about food from Buddy? Come on, Christian.
Oh, yeah, the Buddy's was the best.
Wasn't that the original Psycho hotel that you guys stayed in the first time around?
The Marcotte.
First time, you know,
I think that was the inspiration for it. Yes.
John, I'm not gonna lie to you. They stayed there again for Sigma Di.
Oh yep. Gosh.
They were nice. The people on that were really nice.
Oh, yeah, the family that owns the motel is great, and the rooms are nice. But yes, it does bear a slight resemblance.
It's out in the middle of nowhere, remember?
Yeah.
In all honesty, no offense there, but the Midwest is kind of out there in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-oh, I didn't say that. I did not say
that. Hey, the Midwest
is beautiful. Are you from there or something?
I actually pulled out a map of the United States one day, and they just had completely removed, you know, Michigan, Iowa, Illinois. It's gone because there's like nobody pays attention anyway. All there is Detroit. I want to forget that, so it is crazy.
Michael, you're on your own with that.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm no part of that.
A moment of silence, please.
Right.
A moment Mike Hoffman dies again.
Right. Mike also suffers from a disease called foot and mouth. It's actually...
I'm a talkative guy. Anyone that knows me will tell you I'm very, very uppity. That's how I do go a few days out.
I think that spread to a lot of people on the set, too. But
yeah, like mainly our actors.
Right.
And Eat, also our audio mixer, Dustin Berta, I believe, on Sigma Di went quite a few days without sleep. Although, he wasn't doing so good that last day, was he, Pete? He was pretty grumpy. Is Pete alive, or did he die?
I think Pete's dead.
Oh, well, I think he's still on here.
We lost Pete.
Oh, no, I guess we lost him.
We lost him.
No, you were,
I'm going to bed.
John's still here.
Yay!
No, but John is still here.
Everybody else, and Christian, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here. My phone's about to go dead, though, if that means anything.
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about, too. I'm out wandering around the putt-putt course here.
We have a putt-putt course?
Yes, we have mini-golf. Look.
This is going to be a great week. We're
living large.
No VHS player, but they have putt-putt.
We have putt-putt and the pub.
Where are their values? Where do their values lie?
I'm telling you, we will send you pictures of the tub. You will not believe it.
All right, send it to me.
I was planning to watch Microwave Massacre tonight, but that's okay.
Ooh, good movie.
Which one? What is it called?
No, but some cheesy movie. Microwave Massacre. No.
Microwave Massacre is a classic.
What
Absolutely
is that?
Classic.
It's a 1980-something schlock fest. But, no, but, yeah, just to let you know, John, actually, I'm out of commission this week. I finally, as you know, I've worked kind of straight, so we all came up here and went to Disney for a week. So that's where I am.
Disney?
Disney, absolutely. I'm down here. The Florida Disney, not yours.
Well, yeah. That's the only Disney. This one out here is kind of like a facsimile of.
It's a satellite store.
But it's the original one, so there's parts you know?
It's the original, but the Florida Disney's like, it's everything, you know.
Yeah, I've heard it's better. I haven't actually been to either, but. No.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no.
You need to come to Florida, then.
Well, you have to understand, I live in Virginia, so I'm the home of Busch Gardens.
From Maryland. I've been to Busch Gardens. I'm from Baltimore.
Yeah, but let's not forget King's Dominion again, man. That place is
King's Dominion, yes. Paramount.
Busch Gardens, Hershey Park.
Yeah, Hershey Park is there. I've never been to Hershey Park. I've been trying to
Hershey
get up
Park's
there.
Great.
Megan's from Maryland, so she's been trying to get me to go up there and check out Hershey Park over, because it's not too
And
long.
She's a hell of a writer.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my gosh. You give her anything and she could turn it into gold.
Megan was writing the real quick. I want to say this about Meg. When she was writing most of the clown, the script that we gave Corbin was written by Megan. And Corbin Burnson's been in the industry for God knows like 30 years. And his parents, I don't know if anyone knows, but I believe his mother also was a soap star. And I was talking with Corbin on the phone, and before he actually hired us to do the first draft of the script, he wanted to write a kind of rough script that we turned in. And when we turned it in, he actually called on the phone, literally. And at the time, I was at my job, I remember. I was working at a cell phone company trying to, you know, do the commission thing. And my owners were there, and my phone rings, as Corbin Burnson. And he's like, hey, I just read your guy's script, and I've got to tell you, I've been in the industry for 27 years, and yours is the most beautifully written script that I've read in terms of pacing, wordage, and just getting the proper, I guess, schematics right, so to say, of a script. And my boss started yelling at me, and I pretty much kind of quit. You know, and I was like, screw this. But, you know, Corbin's here, so... the minute he saw Meg's script and said that, I knew that Megan would actually have a very fruitful career as a writer, you know. So, Megan.
You guys.
So what script was that? Like, what movie was that?
It's Corbin actually was planning to direct it his first film was called The Clown, and at the time, like, we came to it for a second revision, then we got extremely, extremely busy doing, he was going to use quite a bit of our script, but not all of it, and came to us with some changes, but we ended up moving from Pittsburgh to Illinois and doing the whole spring break thing, so we never actually got to complete the final draft of that form. So I know he had, like, a whole house of writers.
You guys, my phone's going dead.
Okay, write us tomorrow.
Okay, call you guys later. Have a good one. Great talking to you.
All right, yeah, thank you for calling in, dude.
Yes,
all right, buddy.
Christian as well. All right, and IMDb. All right, thank you, Christian.
Okay, later, guys.
Bye, Christian.
Okay, bye. Bye.
But, yeah, so I know Corbin is not yet to make that film, and to be honest, I've been bad about getting back in contact with him lately because I've just been extremely swamped doing these other things. But hopefully it'll get into production sometime soon because I thought it was actually a really solid script, and I don't want to go too much in there, but he just had some simple tweaks for us, just like to change it from a hard R, like a more PG-13 type script. And like I said, with the move to Illinois and making spring break, and then we got Rod, just... we weren't going to be the people to complete that for him at that time. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. But
I was surprised they didn't try to call anybody else in to complete it, if he had to.
I'm sorry?
I'm surprised he didn't, like, try to call anybody else in to, like, kind of finish it up.
I'm sure
or...
he did. No, I think he had household of writers work. I'm just not sure if he's actually directed. He hasn't directed the film yet. I mean, he actually hasn't made it. I know that he had the finances.
We turned in, we were, like, the third string.
We were the third set.
Of writers, he had given his idea to, I thought we were the third set of people he'd given the idea to, and, you know, of course, he'd only, you know, met us once and everything, and he's like, you know, I'll give you guys a shot, and we turned in a script, and he, you know, he seemed to really like it, and then he's like, well, I have some ideas, there's something I want to change a little bit, and of course, you know, everybody gets insanely busy, and, you know, he's got a full plate, and then I never thought we'd be as busy as we were, and I don't know where it stands at this point, but I definitely would like to see something happen with it, because as much as I love our slasher films, I'd like to do something a little different, just for a change.
So did you guys go to, like, school for that at all? Like, did you guys study writing or do anything like that?
I didn't. I pretty much... maybe a creative writing class in high school, but other than that, when I met Mike, I pretty much wrote, you know, poems. I was a, you know, I guess I could call myself a poet. I had been published once a long time ago, and it was really funny. Mike and I, we met, we were both working jobs at the local mall, and we both met on our break, and he's asking me, well, I used to make, you know, I've made a few movies, and I thought, you know, wow, this is a really bad pickup line. This guy's telling me he's a filmmaker. And then, of course, I, you know, looked him up, like, oh, okay, he's actually telling the truth. And
did you look him on IMDb or something?
On our first date, he handed me his cell phone after trying to convince me that he wasn't some creepy guy making up stories, and had internet on his cell phone and showed me, it's like, you know, look, I'm, you know, not messing with you, and like, oh, okay, you know. A little safer knowing that, you know, this wasn't like some sort of story he tells people. But then after that, he's like, we should write something together, and...
Yeah, and the first thing we actually started working on, more I remember, was actually tweaking the... Because we already had a script for Rot that was kind of there with Bill Cassinelli from the Scary Tales films, but he was, you know, very busy at the time. He had had, he just had take care of a new baby, and he just was never able to complete, but we had, like, 20 pages there and an idea. So the first thing we actually were writing, if you remember, Meg, right, was we went over to his house and tried to finish it, but it just never happened, so...
Yeah, we started reworking Rot.
Yeah, and when we met Patrick, he's like, do you have any horror scripts? And we're like, yeah, you know what? We're going to write one spring break, and spring break was wrote in 48 hours. I basically crammed in all the massacre-type movies and then just wrote a giant spoof. Like,
well, Mike skipped over a whole chunk of time, and if you said you read the article, Clueless in Pittsburgh, okay, well, that would sum up the whole chunk of time that, you know, Mike jumped over about moving to Pittsburgh and being, I guess, slightly naive, thinking that, you know, when people say they have something, don't always jump at it until, you know, you have a little more stability.
I think we lost John.
Oh.
John?
Yeah, John's not here.
Uh-oh. The call's going to get less fun.
Oh, wait, he's calling back in. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello, is this John?
Yes, it's John Chomsky. My cell phone went dead, so I picked up a landline. Sorry for the delay there, guys.
Oh,
that's okay.
No. Are you home or?
Yeah, I just got home right now. I was walked in the door and the phone went dead. So it was a blessing in disguise.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So where were we?
We were talking about how they kind of got this all like pretty much off the ground.
Oh yeah.
So it's a pretty big story, I guess. And we kind of like skipped a few things, but you know we're kind of going back to. A lot of the...
You know, and that's my fault, John. There are things I
no, yeah, that's fine.
Go ahead, Meg.
I want to remember,
and there's some things I want to forget, Meg.
No, it's just, like you said before, you know, it's all been a learning experience. I mean, yeah, you know, everyone has their stories. Ours just end up being a little stranger, I guess, but it all, you know, knock on wood, has gone really, really well. You know, we've met a lot of great people, and... We have had a lot of fun. You know, at the time you're thinking, God, I've been up for 36 hours straight. John remembers this. I'm sitting on a bar stool on the property where we were shooting. I've been up for a couple of days. I'm scrubbing blood off of his jacket. You know, he had gotten some on it from one of the other scenes, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, we're shooting with the jacket tomorrow. And I literally, in mid-sentence, passed out.
Absolutely.
And fell on the floor. And I just remember waking up maybe like 3 hours later on a couch having, you know, no recollection of how I got there, what happened. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, you were talking. You were, you know, scrubbing away and poof, just fell straight down.
That's the proverbial, the candle was burning at both ends and they both met at that point.
Yeah, pretty much.
You were out like a rock.
That must have been funny to watch that kind of tumble forward.
But you know,
wish somebody had a videotape of it.
As we look back, I think those are the things that make these movies so fun.
Oh yeah,
all the stories you guys can tell, and
that the $250 million budget sometimes don't get because everyone leaves after 8 hours. The union says go home, and the editors take over at that point. But the real troopers like you guys have to sit there and get work prepared for the next day.
So yeah, I was told I had a terrible, terrible reputation.
Hold on, there's another caller. Hold on a second.
Got another caller, okay.
310, you should be on. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Well, they hung up earlier, so I'm wondering what's going on.
Oh, I know that LJ was going to call in a little bit about Rot. But no, I got a reputation as a slave labor buster, I guess, or something around Illinois, where I was working people to death. They worked continuous days without sleep or something. I was like, well, you know, you got 7 days to shoot a feature here, and we're shooting 70 pages. So that film, we did have two cameras quite a bit, but we didn't always have two camera operators because people did sleep in shifts, despite what they said. And I was putting my head down going, oh, my God, was that too hard? I just wanted this to be as good as it could with the limited crew. And there's so many locations in these films. I'd rather have limited coverage at a lot of locations within my 80 minutes of runtime than be a low-budget you know, you don't want to have like a low budget picture, you know, like a $100,000 flick that takes place in one house. I like to go to a police station or a bar and open up, you know, even those films like a lake and a prison or, and when you have a limited shooting schedule to run back and forth and limited gear that can't be two places at once, unfortunately you're going to have to run consecutive to get it done if you're behind schedule and weather and reshoots during, you know, during the original shoot, sometimes now we'll reshoot it, that'll happen. But I was talking to Joe Estevez one day, and Joe's like, hey, you know what? That's actually a great reputation to have. So that just means that no matter what you'll direct, it'll get done.
And Joe's a great guy.
And Joe's a great guy. So it actually lifted my spirit because I was, you know, just didn't want anyone to hate me when I was done with that film. You know,
do you know what's funny? John was talking before about all the training he's had, and actually Mike, on an earlier film, had an actor who taught acting classes.
Hello?
Hold on.
Something's going on with the show. Is everybody still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, John, you're there?
Are you guys hearing that noise?
Yeah, I'm hearing it.
Okay.
Let's host a reunion of Terra coming back to get us.
Yeah, that's what the sound mixer Sue Willett was joking about. She's like, oh, God, we're back after spring break. There certainly is a reunion of Terra. We went back for the pickup shots. The film lived up to its title. So those 4 days were very hellish. So.
I don't know. I mean, we did go over the hour time limit, but it says if we go over, that's okay. It's still recorded, so I don't know.
Maybe
it's a sign for us to be quiet now. Mike, we're sucking up all the time.
I don't know. Hold on. Let me.
Hello?
All right.
Everything's still here. It's just that,
hey,
yes.
Who,
I don't know.
Let's be quiet for a second. Who keeps saying hello?
Hello. Okay.
It sounds like LJ, but struggling from a cell phone. That's what I get out of it. Is it John, do you agree?
Might be. What is it?
I think John's gone.
I'm here.
Oh, you're still here. Okay.
John, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, this is getting nasty. So I'll tell you what. Before this gets too bad with the phone calls, I think we should call it a show.
Well, actually, okay, hold on. Let's see if it works now, because apparently John's gone, and let's see if maybe for some reason. Okay, it's sounding better. Maybe because he hung up and maybe it was still on there. It was kind of messing up the reception.
Okay.
Well, Mike, I'll let you take over because you have the phone charger. My cell phone's dying, so.
Okay, yeah, well, that's probably a good sign there, Jonathan.
No, my cell phone's about to either just shut down or explode. I haven't figured it out, so. I'll let Mike finish. Mike, finish
I'll,
the story here.
I'll try to finish. No. Anyway, no, this is just like, you know, I just, if people, you know, the one thing I do want to get out there is that if they really want to check out a flick that I directed, I really hope that everybody does check out Rot. I don't know what they're doing for distribution at this point, but I know there are some offers and some buyers interested, and we're more than anything, we're really trying to get word of mouth out about the film, because it's the one time I didn't try to do anything with Fangoria, and just kind of we shot it very quietly off the radar.
Well, hold on. I guess another 310. You should be on. Hello.
Yes. Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, LJ?
Oh, hey, LJ, what's up?
What's up, Mike?
Dude, just real quick. This is LJ Green. He plays Tyrone in Reunion of Terror.
Nice. So we really did have a Reunion of Terror before.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and everybody was just on a second ago, but kind of like I think cell phones died and connections went bad, so I'm sorry, dude. I had Ryan call you real quick. So,
okay.
Before I was kind of already in the process of the phone thing, so I do apologize. I was trying to grab you. But
I'm guessing the sound that we heard earlier was probably John's landline.
Oh.
I'm guessing, because he's the one who we couldn't hear at all when it was messing up like that, and then he hung up, so.
Yeah, no, but just real quick, you know, just I guess I was just quickly get caught up at the last minute, but just, hey, LJ gives an awesome performance. If they watch all of Rot, I mean, there's some really dynamite stuff in there that he gives off, so. And I know that LJ is one of the few people out there, aside from the producers, that's actually seen a cut of the film, so I think that, as an actor, I hope you were happy with it, LJ, you know.
Oh, yeah, I was. I was very happy with it.
How did you get to see the cut of the film?
How did I what?
How did you get to see the cut of the film that everybody else didn't get a chance to see?
I think he's been in communication with Patrick out there in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
right? Or,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Just being good friends with the producers. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, just I was watching the film like, God, Elsie's actually really, really good here, and it's always nice when you're directing a like I think John was saying the same thing. Like everybody generally really is trying their best, but I mean, there's that level that you cross, and you always try to achieve the director. And the unfortunate thing is, in small amounts of time, I mean, the look of your film is so important. And when you're on a one-camera shoot in 8-9 days, you got a choice. Do you want to sit there and block your actors all day, or do you want to get the shots that are needed for coverage, we'll cut together and give your film the best look? And when you have someone like LJ that can come in and bang out a scene or knock out a monologue real quick and do it with intensity every single time for the one-camera setup without wanting to kill me, as a director, it makes me look good. You know, I really appreciate it, so, you know.
Oh, yeah, not a problem. Not only that, though, but, you know, I feel, Mike, you're such a perfectionist. I mean, because there were a couple of times where it was late and we were all tired. Like, oh, man, you know, but the fact that Mike is such a perfectionist and he just wants to get the best shot possible, it also helps me out as an actor to know that I have a director that wants to get the best take of me, you know. So that was really awesome.
I appreciate it, you know. So, you know, it just there's that fine line, LJ, too, everyone has to understand, is directing these features that I always try to not cross. But it's, I don't obviously want a bad performance in the film, but if it's something that's going to be difficult to remedy, you just don't have the time, unfortunately, because LJ will know. We did shoot, like I said, Rot over about 30 days, but we only shot it for 9 days. I mean, that's what we shot. And we had the pickup days, but unfortunately we were talking earlier about the flash flood that kind of got rid of our pickup night that we lost when the Jenny died and the rain started and the levee broke. So that was kind of a disaster. But no, you know, this whole thing has been I think a learning experience for all of us, and I just want to get out there that there are a lot of these talented folks out there in LA, and I'm here in Florida, but anyone out there is thinking of making a film that's even listening to this should contact these people, you know. And I think, LJ, you're on MySpace, right?
Yeah, I'm on MySpace, yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, hold on. We got another 310. Hold on 1 second. Hello, 310. You should be on.
John Chomsky.
Hey, John.
Hey. What's up,
hey.
LJ?
Hey, what's going on, John?
What's going on, buddy?
Good to hear you.
Nice.
Yes, John, so I guess was your landline acting up earlier or something, or...?
Yeah, I switched over from my cell phone. I just got off a plane and I came back home and I was trying to coordinate things on my landline and it kind of was giving me a little bit of grief. So I'm back.
Oh, okay, so that really was okay. We heard like a big noise like throughout. So we're wondering
what was
going on.
There was a huge explosion here in Redondo Beach.
Really?
Oh wow.
No, just kidding.
Oh.
I was gonna say, well, that's it.
I was gonna say that would be crazy if it worked, considering we're talking about a lot of explosions.
I don't think it'd be rude there, John, but it may be convenient for me because they can move Hollywood down here to Hollywood, Florida.
Oh, that would be great.
It would be an hour from my house, so there'd be more work.
And the cost of living.
And the cost of living would be
for something you could get down there for $500,000. It's like $7 million here.
Right.
And let me tell you, if you're looking at buying real estate in Florida right now, rapidly dropping. So,
perfect.
You're more than welcome. But no, I was actually talking to LJ real quick about, John, did you ever actually see the whole cut of Rot, or have you not seen it?
I haven't seen the whole thing yet.
Okay, so I got to talk to Patrick about getting, I think you need to get together with Patrick to take a look at the film over the course of this week, if you have free time, or he does. You guys should get together and watch it. You know, I think you'll be impressed. I think especially LJ in there is a lot of good stuff with Christian. And I was just talking in general real quick about just how nice it is a director to have guys like you or LJ that come on and kind of know what they want to do, know their scenes to where, as a director, I just don't have time to block you guys in every which way and get a great performance because I'm more concerned with coverage with the limited shooting time. So when I have guys like you on the set, like I always tell me, LJ, you guys make me look good as a director. Because they'll say, oh, God, for a low-budget film, actually there's a lot of good performances in there. And you'll read a lot of times in the reviews, like, well, the director really got a great performance. And from directing these features and working with people like you guys, sometimes I think it's not the director, but it's the actors who just come prepared, know their lines, and know how to do it the right way. So,
well, LJ, I think you have to agree with that, right?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree, man.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy because I know a lot of people that seen it up on YouTube. They comment on you, John, as the fact that you being a creepy guy. So
oh no,
it's so funny. because John just called me the other day and said, you know, I want to be the lead in a romantic comedy, like the real light
right.
guy.
Yeah, right. I could probably pull it off.
I would love to try. It would be a great, great thing. But, hey, you know, that's the thing about some of the people here. It's like I'm just hoping that we get the ability to make more films with a bigger budget, obviously. I think we all agree at this time. But get out there and do something that can showcase all our talents with time, a 30-day shoot, months of pre-production and prep where the film's just not put together in 2-3 weeks and we're just all flown in the day before. You know, half the time on Rot, I was out there a couple weeks before we were shooting and then came back to Florida for a week and all the locations changed. And I was flown back in 30 hours before the film was to be directed. And I was like, oh, my God, I've got to direct a film. I don't know where the sun's going to be at this direction. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? So hopefully the next film will have pre-production and meetings and rehearsals.
Well,
and,
Michael, can you let the audience in? I, a lot of times when I look at the final cut, everybody, and I see what we do as actors, but I see what Michael does as a director and as the cinematographer. It's like, explain to folks how you can go out to, like, Lancaster and just find a spot that looks perfect for the scene that you want, and you get it and go grab it. Can you explain how you come to that?
Yeah, you know, it's actually my history as an editor, you know, is film's a very, very linear process and putting the whole thing together, and I actually started out as an editor, worked doing some local TV and helped also reassemble some other independent films that were in trouble, and the director was like, oh my God, we don't have the footage, and I'm like, yeah, you do. You just have to use it properly, what you have, you know, use it sparingly. And when I go out there to shoot a scene, I'm like, well, here's the problem. In this specific location, there's junk in the background, so we have to shoot this direction, but the sun's going to be bad here. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, as the editor, what do I want to see to make this film more, you know, to make this scene work?
So, Michael, you're doing it actually in reverse. If you think about it, you're looking at the end result before you even shoot the original scene.
Correct. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's
like that scene. Christian picks up the hitchhiker out on Palm Blossom Highway, and that scene looks like it was scouted for 6 months, but you did it in like 4 hours.
Not even, actually. We were at the restaurant, and I had less than 2 hours for that. And we had to find a spot that just would work, and it was funny because one of the DPs that was first on the film, I can hear screaming at me in the audio going, there's all kinds of junk in the background. I'm not filming that direction. I don't want to hear him say, you're DP, Mr. Junk, and I'm thinking, you know, you're not trusting me as the editor to find the shots I need to make this location look that way.
Absolutely. You need it to look dirty and dungy and dusty.
How about Rot? The cabin that we utilized was in the middle of a neighborhood. LJ will tell you that right now. You were there, John. I mean, there were houses around it everywhere.
Yeah,
I mean, that was
the lady next door was telling you to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we were right. Yeah, that was. Yeah, we were talking about that earlier with the kid that said we were shooting a porno film there.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Furthest thing from the truth.
But,
right.
When you watch the film, you know, it's like I said, we shot it relatively quickly, but it looks like you guys walk through the woods for, you know, 45 minutes, an hour or so, and get to this kind of abandoned cabin, and one direction there's a road, in one direction there's a house, and one direction, you know, and you have to choose your battles sparingly. So as a director, sometimes what I'll do is cheat a reverse. I'll film a reverse insert, like with the opening scene with the lesbians in the woods at night. I'd actually shoot a reverse of them with the background I liked. Remember they're filming their eye line and their axis, and then go shoot their like two-shot or their wide angle at a completely different location, but match their location and the light to match it. And I knew how I was going to cut it to make it look like they're really standing there with all those trees around them. But, you know, generally if you saw the abandoned cabin we used for the film, where the girls were standing, there really weren't any trees behind them in the opening scene. So we kind of shoot the wide shot over their back, seeing the cabin. And then earlier in the day, I'd seen a spot in the woods that kind of matched the side of that foliage, but had tree cover to the left, and we would move them over 600, 700 feet and shoot their reverses there. And that's kind of like John said, my mind works backward. And
that's the thing I think is most important to talk to young filmmakers about is how... You go you go backwards, full. In other words, you start from reverse and go the other way. You find that, LJ?
Right.
You know what I mean?
He finds the shot
and then goes and gets it.
Right, exactly.
He doesn't set it up and then hopes the sun comes up at a certain time.
Right?
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's the thing that, unfortunately, as a director, like, I want everything to be perfect, too, John, but, you know, unfortunately, in low-budget films where you're going to have sun and you're shooting a low ISO camera and we're shooting heavy on contrast, the unfortunate thing you can't avoid sometimes are some blowouts here and there, some underlit areas, but more than anything, I always realize as the editor that the end result is the most important thing. And if it's not always perfect looking in terms of a theatrical scope, if the content is there and the viewers are interested and it's not just another bad B-movie with people talking in one location, some cheesy off-camera deaths, not much nudity, the story doesn't even interest you remotely, if you've got the people hooked, they'll also forgive little things because a lot of times when I rent B-movies, seeing the little things that are there in the background or like a junk pile or something that shouldn't be there is part of the fun is spotting those problems too.
Absolutely.
You know,
right.
Nobody wants to rent a $50,000 movie that was shot perfectly with you know, giant camera rigs and porter cranes because then the fun of renting a low-budget indie with your buddies, you're grabbing some beers one night, you're bringing home some popcorn, you know, the fun is gone from watching the film when it has complete Hollywood production values. It's just not there.
I think
it's something that Grindhouse, that Tarantino movie, is trying to harken back to, but I think they exploited it, like, a little bit too much and made that a little too ridiculous with the missing reason.
Also, too, the one thing I noticed about you, Michael, was the fact that it seemed like you were actually editing the whole movie in your head while you were shooting. Like, you knew exactly what you wanted. And the fact that you were able to quickly get something when it was a matter of time or whatever, you just went ahead and got it.
Absolutely, LJ.
That's so true.
Yeah, and John will know that. Like, a lot of times we'll run through a scene, like, in less than 45 minutes, and we'll get all our coverage, and I'll say this will cut, and I'll just kind of be done. And, you know, obviously the reason as a director why I'll request some pickup shots is because these are a limited budget, and what I like to do is go back, and if the movie's good, I'd actually say, hey, you know what? Man, we can make this better. Now let's get this, this, and this. If we can go back and just pick up these simple inserts, this would be amazing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I like, if we can afford to push the movie to the next level, which isn't always an option, but the thing is, I'm always happy when I come back with a film that has good content that makes me excited to continue wanting to work on it, even if the film will take a year to get done or get completed the right way, or a year and a half. At least we know that the film that we made is the one we all wanted to make. We didn't go out there for 10 days with the camera, come back and say, hey, you know what, here's 50 grand in the can or 100 grand. Here it is. This movie goes through the motions. There's nothing special about it, but it's marketable, and walk away.
And
I
we need to do it all over again next week.
Absolutely. I want a film where everything is as good as it can be for what we had to work with. So, again, that's probably why I drive producers nuts. People were laughing. I think Pete earlier was joking about the producer trying to kill us on Sigma Dai, but I think I was driving him nuts because I'm like, hey, I think we can pick up some of this stuff and make it better. I mean, he had a different idea entirely for the edit, so I'm sure what he did was awesome. I just haven't seen it. But, you know, I do tend to drive people nuts in that respect, but just believe me, if I can get the best film that I can get, it's also in the investors and producers' best interest to get that same film from a monetary perspective as well. It's just that a lot of times in these films with a small investment, people need it back relatively quickly. So there's that fine line you have to walk with, okay, can we live with audio issues and this and that, or can we actually wait and get this thing done right for a year, but it'll take time because we're asking for favors. We can't afford to pay a lot of Foley's artists.
Hey, Mike, can you explain one thing really quick to the audience? Remember when we discussed Steven Spielberg did the movie The Car?
It was actually the one that you're talking about. Yeah, I know.
Remember that?
About.
And
yeah,
that was
yeah.
one of his first films, like at your beginning.
I think it was
right
Duel.
Now. Can you explain the parallels? Because he was a beginning movie maker at the time, and he had limited budget, and he did the most at what he could have with him at the time.
Okay.
So how do you? I think the audience would like to know how that happens.
Well, you know, with him, he probably, that's a good question. You know, it's weird. It's just like just to tell you something about me, John, it's like, I know I read this all the time, and I've seen Robert Rodriguez DVDs, and he comes out and says, these are some home videos I made when I was a kid. And ever since I was 3, I've tried to be a director. So it's a hard thing for me to explain to you, really, like, okay, how does this happen? How do you get something that's of quality in a short amount of time? I don't know. My brain works differently than other people. Like, I run numbers backward in my head, but I'm real quick with numbers. And I run shots backward and scenes back when I'm directing them. That's why I'm a nightmare to work with for DP. And they always think I'm crazy, but I'm like, no, we need this, we need this, now we need this. And they're like, where's your shot list? I'm like, hey, you know, my shot list is up here. But I don't
know. Yeah, but they don't see the same shots you see, right, LJ?
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I've come to terms with many a DP. You know, so. You know what, John, that's a question I can't answer. That's a good thing. I don't know. I appreciate the kind words from you guys. I'm not used to getting them.
But you know, I think that's what makes like people like you and people like Robert Rodriguez such a genius at what you guys do, because you guys don't do everything like the average director does. Like you know, most directors, they sit back with a monitor, steps on their cell phone, not caring. Where you're right up there. Like you're like, oh, okay, you know, like, give me the camera.
That is so right.
You know,
you've seen them there too.
Right.
6 o'clock in the morning, looking like shit. Remember that?
Right.
Well, of course, yeah. No, yeah. Like on one of my films was Spring Break. I came up dressed nicely the first 2 days, and pardon the expression on the radio, I was like, F it. You know, I was like, what's the point? You know, I don't know. It's like I said, but LJ will tell you. I drive probably every producer I work with nuts. I'm sure Patrick's complained, and I'm sure that the guy who was trying to produce Rot to start with ended up not completing the film, but he probably, I'm sure, had some issues with me as well, more than a few, right, LJ?
Right.
LJ, apparently you have a fan on my chat room.
What's that?
You have a fan on my chat room. Apparently somebody's mad because after an hour, it doesn't the live feed stops, so they can't hear it live, and they have to wait till the archives, but it's still being recorded.
And
apparently somebody went on my chat room and said that they're sad that they can't hear it right now because, you know, that it's just not, you know, available to hear. So they wanted to hear you talk.
Oh, wow.
A friend of yours.
Okay. Wow. I did post it up on MySpace, so might be one of my friends on that.
I threw
up
a bulk too, yeah. So
there
LJ's we go.
LJ's an awesome actor, guys.
Right.
You know, LJ,
he's a unique character.
Are you on reunion
John,
of their MySpace
now, right
site?
Now, until these films are released, we're all going to have to share the one fan. All right?
But,
so I think LJ takes this week. John, you can have him next week, and I'll take him the week after.
Right, okay. That sounds like
a plan.
Make us
all feel good about ourselves.
I think we got it.
Mm-hmm.
No, but the one thing I do want to make sure is because I'm about ready for myself to call it quits because I got some park hopping to do, and I'm actually, you know, Megan was screaming at me going, what, you got to call the producers of Hogzilla early in the morning tomorrow? You got a radio show tonight? You're supposed to be on vacation this week? What the hell are you doing? So I don't want to do this to people anymore. But the one thing I do want to get out there as well is I honestly, as a director, before I made these films, I did not know John, I mean, at all. I mean, I met him right before Spring Break, so this is not like an old friend plug, believe me. We come from totally different backgrounds. But I do want to say that both John and LJ, you know, if you're in the Los Angeles area and you're listening to this, which I'm hoping a lot of filmmakers are, these guys are definitely worth looking up. And I think that, can we give contact information out at all on the radio or...
Well, I prefer like website stuff or
absolutely.
Like MySpace stuff or things like that. But
find LJ MySpace and the Rot Friends. And if anyone hasn't seen the trailer yet for Rot, I really hope they go take a look at it. Or even the music video I just directed for Faking the Death Wish, and all that stuff's up at the MySpace page with links to it. So if you want to get in touch with John Shumsky as well, you can also contact me through the MySpace page. I'm one of the moderators. So it's myspace.com/reunionofterror. Pretty simple. And if, you know, anyone sees the trailer, thinks it's cool, something they're into, you know what, add us to your friends and get the word out there and let everybody know that there's a horror film out there that's not scared to be brutal with its violence. There's limited violence in the film, but the violence there is pretty brutal, and it's not torture porn. It's more, when you watch it, you'll see what I mean. It's pretty affecting.
No,
so.
It's real excellent. Well, I'm going to sign off since everyone's signing off right now, guys.
All right, John. Well, you know, have a good night.
All right, yeah, John, thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having us on, Michael, LJ,
yes,
Megan,
sir.
The host. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, I'll talk to you guys soon. Call me anytime.
All right, take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, also, I just want to let you know that my friend and actor, you know, I'm friends with this actor named James Sheridan Smith, who acted in a movie called Survival down in North Carolina. He saw your trailers, Michael, and he loved them.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Yeah, he was like, wow, these are the kind of, you know, from after seeing them, that they were the kind of movies he'd want to, you know, he'd want to work on. You know?
Oh, cool. Yeah, you know, I always try to, you know, I'm a big fan of the horror genre, and it goes way back with me, so I do understand the genre well, you know, and hope, like I said, my films are always kind of spoofy, and even Rot, as serious as it is, slips into camp here and there, and when you see the plot twist on the film, which we wouldn't dare delve out, but that's the one thing that's, I think, effective about the film is that it switches gears for the last 25 minutes, and LJ, you have to agree.
Yeah, totally.
It's an unsettling mix when you watch the film again, because everything seems very intentional. So the film was cut to a really, really tight, like, 82 minutes, and everything that was left had to happen, but I was trying to move the story along very quickly, but keep the traditional tones of horror films that people grew up with watching in there, but push it forward. And then when you watch the ending, you're like, oh, okay, let me go back and see it again. Because when I watch a film like The Sixth Sense, everything slowly led up to the conclusion. On this film, I kind of wanted to hit it out of left field. So I played it a completely different pacing than, you know, you would expect. But tried to keep people like that that are into the genre, like, in the loop where they want to rent it and take a look. So I do appreciate the kind words. I'm sure LJ does as well. We could use them.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yes, definitely. And it's probably going to be one of the shocking endings anyone's probably ever going to see. I
do agree with that. It's very, very 70s drive-in cinema when you see the ending of the film. But
right.
That's the one thing I was concerned about with distributors touching it. It's not content in terms of so much the story, but when you see it and realize where the film led up to the whole time subtly, it's like, okay. And like I said, the first hour of the film is a Guess the Killer type movie, which is very traditional. So we just try to do very subtle changes on it, like the group of, you know, all horror features from the 80s start with a group of people camping in the woods, have a little sex scene, a guy and a girl in the tent. We just made it a girl and a girl and played a very traditional scene from there on. You know, I said, okay, if I was a renter, I'd rather see the scene with lesbians. That's just an honest opinion. You know, and it follows the path. So
was that tough telling your girlfriend/writer that, oh yeah, you know, I want a lesbian sex scene in this movie?
Actually, she had a much more brutal lesbian death scene, and that movie's been cut down twice because of the content. The script was first cut before we shot it because they would not let us do the original kill scene in the opening because they said it was way, way too brutal. And then toward the end of the movie, there's a torture scene that I had to cut a little bit shorter because people were actually quite offended by it. So, she actually had no problems writing that scene and some cheesy dialogue. So a couple of her lines got cut out, but I think my favorite one was the two girls driving in the car, and one girl turned to the other and said, oh, honey, you didn't buy anything at the store. And the other one said, it's because I intend on eating you all weekend. So Megan is not fearful of writing that kind of dialogue at all. She understands the genre pretty well.
I've heard you actually have a whole load of, the worst movies of all time, kind of.
I do, and one of the guys here with us this week, up at Disney, Ryan, he hosts a bi-weekly bad movie night that I bring him over to and we watch. I do. I own the worst of the worst movies that you've never heard of, unless you know who Carl J. Sakenik is. Probably
nope.
Not. No. So,
I mean, and I'm a pretty big independent cult guy. Like, I love, you know, so, wow, I'm sure you've got many movies that I've never even heard of.
Start here. Alien, if you want to write this down, start with Alien Beasts. Move on to Night of Horror. Then go to Hell Roller and finish with Las Vegas Bloodbath. And I guarantee that you'll never look at independent film the same way again.
These are definitely, like, the lowest of the low, or...
One of them was shot on, like, VHSC or something by a mentally handicapped person who speaks in double talk the entire film. And sets the camera on a tripod and has fights with his friends in the front yard, and somehow he got into some stores.
See, I used to do that when I was, like, when I was, like, 10.
Yeah,
and I didn't know how movies were made, you know?
He's
Like, I didn't even know what editing was. I thought you could just do it all.
Right. No, this guy probably edits with two VCRs still, I was told. He's amazing. I was thinking,
still?
Like,
yeah, do you think he's still making movies?
He is. Actually, a guy that knew him contacted me and said, oh, my God, you should buy his whole catalog, but it was like a grand. He wants like $10 a pop or $13 a pop for his VHS, and I'm going to buy a bulk. If he sells me for like $4 a piece, you know, he'll make some money. I'll get some money. I'll pay for the shipping, whatever, but I ain't paying no like $13. And if I bought like just two, it was like $20 a piece, and I was thinking like, yeah, you know. But no, I do have a huge cult film collection, and some of the VHSs and the oversized boxes I have are worth a lot. I think like a couple of them are worth. I have a film like called Jive Turkey. It's a blaxploitation movie from the 70s. It's worth like $300.
That's awesome. That's an awesome title.
Jive Turkey?
Yeah.
It's one of those really offensive, crappy Larry Cohen-type blaxploitation pictures. But, yeah, no, I love all genres. And, you know, I'm sure I was watching Jive Turkey go, and, you know, I bet Quentin Tarantino's seen this. Just from Jackie Brown, I bet he's watched this. So, you know, but... Yeah, I don't know. That's my hobby. So I probably got over about 4,000 titles you've never heard of.
Do you actually own, like, Intruder? Like, the original Scott Spiegel movie?
Oh, wait, the one with Bruce Campbell?
And Sam Raimi?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I have this one in the grocery store, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I got that. Yeah, that's too good, though.
I guess that's not really a bad movie. It's, you know, really well
it's
shot.
It's little heard of, but no, I'm talking way more.
Obscure?
Yes. Like, I might have the last remaining VHS of a few movies. So, I actually went out, and real quick, there was a store called Superstore Video News. And when I was in high school, like, my big hobby was going up with my buddy Bill that we ended up doing the Scary Tales movies with, and the guy that co-wrote some of Rot. We'd go rent the movies in the VHS clamshell boxes, scan the covers, and return them with our own write-ups on the back, insulting the movie, and, like, the store owner. And we changed the titles. So... we'd write something like Fatal Exam and call it Fetal Exam. Or, you know, and write this ridiculous... Or we rented a movie called Asylum of Satan and changed it to Sound of Satan, the musical. And we said it contained scenes like EGAD is at my spleen. So, you know, and you know, we basically, when that store switched to DVD, I bought out, like, their whole catalog. So I've got a storage bin filled to the ceiling of obscure films I don't even know how they found. So... That's about that.
Wow, that's really cool, though.
I studied the worst to try to make the best. It was probably a mistake. I'll have to look back. But yes, that was my very young film school. I'll watch the worst films ever made and figure out what they did wrong and try to not do that.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you tried to do that.
No. I'll spoof that. I'll do that on purpose, but nah, I don't think so. Not that bad. Like, these are bad.
LJ, do you have any advice you would say for any like aspiring actors out there?
Oh yeah, real quick, LJ, didn't you move from Missouri to LA to follow your dream too? Right, you're another.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's pretty much true with me. Yeah, left Missouri, and came out to LA, and coached with a lot of good coaches. Bobby Chance is a really good coach out here in Los Angeles. But pretty much for any actor. That's really, trying to go into it. It's really just knowing your whole craft and knowing whenever you get on set, just to know you're seeing it and know where you're at as an actor. Because I feel that's very important. And also, too, that also helps out the director a lot as far as getting the shots and getting the right moment that they need for a particular scene. So it's definitely just knowing your character and just knowing the script. So that's pretty much the best advice I can give someone.
And yeah, you should add, too, I think it's a long road for all of us as filmmakers.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, too, people, you know, the one thing I've learned about this industry is, especially as a young person, is that a lot of these films that I've directed is that people have come on the set and said, like, the most god-awful things that didn't even make any sense. Like, Hoffman should have covered the scene this way. Hoffman's taking too long. Hoffman to do that. And I realized that, you know, this is an industry where a lot of individuals get jaded. And, you know, if you're a 45-year-old, 50-year-old DP and you come on a set and there's a young guy directing a film that's inexperienced in terms of doing things the Hollywood way, that they can slam you all day right to your face. And to get the scene done, you've just kind of got to take it at that point because the ego game, I've learned, never gets you ahead. You can stop and argue with the person. Like, you know, I've had DPs do it to me constantly. And you can stop and say, hey, I don't want to hear this shit about me. or you can film the scene and just let it go. And the most important thing I think for all young filmmakers to remember is that anything said about you in a derogatory fashion is okay. Don't take it to heart. Take it with a grain of salt. Because if people are remembering you enough to where they actually want to talk about you the day after you left, you still made an impact. Because jealousy is a terrible game out in L.A. Terrible.
Right.
And that's kind of why I don't live there and really have not directed many features out there. It's a really and the ego thing has destroyed so many careers, you know. And whenever someone does have anything derogatory or negative to say, just remember their feedback. And if it's something that can be utilized to aid your film to make it better, like, oh, my God, that Hoffman guy could have cut that scene so much better. He had this and that. Well, listen, because you know what? You can learn something. Maybe they're right. They could be your target demographic. But if it's something that's just ridiculous, just let it roll off. Just like I'm sure LJ is probably known a guy who can – if when Rock comes out in a couple months in stores, you know, I bet you somebody you know will turn to you and say, oh, you're great, man. And then behind your back later, you'll say, oh, that guy sucked, man. I could have delivered that line so much better. You know what? They're just jealous that they weren't the one in the film that people are renting. And it's important. Your real friends will tell you what they think you could do better. Because my real friends have told me always with constructive criticism, hey, Mike, maybe you should cut that scene a little faster, cut it slower. Maybe in your next one you should get more handheld coverage or, you know, whatever. But that input's important, but it should never go to heart. So I just want to let that go.
Also, too, for actors, also, too, you know, one thing to learn from, these are coming from two actors who are known, that's Naomi Watts and Christina Ricci, what they do on set is that just don't be an actor and just stand and look pretty. Like, if you see that a certain department may need help, act like a PA and go help, you know, grab a C-stand and move it somewhere or grab some light and then do that. You know what I mean?
With these films is
for
young up-and-coming actors, I mean, genre, you know what, to be honest, guys who have been in the business for 30 years, LJ, I don't expect them to help us move shit because they're past that
point.
But as a director, my biggest problem was on these films is I'm trying to do something much more professional than I ever have. And I'll have a package. I'll have gear but limited crew. LJ literally is one of the only actors who's ever actually stopped and helped me set up and move my gear. Yeah. And on an independent film set, everybody needs to because you're not just an actor. You're a crew member. Because if you want the film to be good. And the shoot won't go as late as the night, or maybe it won't go continuous. If all the actors stop, say, Mike, what do you need? Or turn to the DP and say, what do you need? Or the gaffer, can I move your lights for you, man? Can I help you move your lights? Can we run stingers? Can we get this done faster? Do you guys need us to pick something up at the store? Do you need more C-stands or flags? I mean, if they could just help and learn it, as an actor, you'll become an invaluable resource. And if that director grows with you, you'll start getting paid as well as that director. Because I'll tell you, the one thing about all of us who have struggled is we remember the people who worked real hard and didn't lose faith.
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, I think LJ's a really great guy because he moved, I don't know how many mornings, LJ wasn't even in the scene and he was there helping to set up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wasn't even part of the scene as an actor. He was just there and he's like, dude, I'm a PA grip. Tell me what to move. And I'm like, wow, this is great. And I remember making low-budget movies with my friends, like the Scary Tales movies, years before this, being that way. But ever since they were financed and produced, and you go to a casting agency or cast a professional actor, even though they're not a name star or a B-movie celebrity, they're already above the level of your film and don't want to move the gear. And let me tell you, that's not a good thing. At least in my perspective as a director, producer. You know, so that's my advice for actors.
Well, LJ, I'm just going to let you know, I just added you on MySpace, so.
Oh, okay, perfect.
I'm guessing that there's a lot of people that, because you posted your thing on the blog, so I'm hoping a lot more people listen to the archives, you know, for
get a chance
to hear you talk and give your advice and stuff. So,
definitely.
And I guess that's the main point of all this, you know, all this show, these shows that I do, is being able to go out there and reach new people and tell people, you know, how to make it, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I don't think either of us have made it yet in terms of we're not going to be walking on the red carpet, but the good news about me right now is I'm content. I'm working. You know, I'm working. I'm directing music videos. I'm working with legitimate people, and I'm doing, you know, editing a legitimate feature right now. I've been financed. I've been there, and it's going to be a struggle.
And you can go stay at Disney and, you know,
Yeah, you know what? I actually was happy to turn around to my friend and say, you know what, I got a check for directing a feature. I mean, it might not have ended on the best terms in particular with that producer, but, you know, I understand as a producer he had his own vision or felt that there are things that could be done differently, and it was a money investment that he wanted to protect. So in those terms, there's absolutely no hard feelings. That's just part of being a
business professional.
And I hope he understands it in my terms that everything I was doing was to protect vision of the picture, which, LJ, you can even admit, it's hard to see sometimes where I'm coming from or anyone's coming from in protecting the integrity of their products. But no person, let me tell you this, no person for no pay wants to fly out some location, sleep on the floor when they sleep, have no bed. In Rock, we were urinating into a 2-liter bottle because there was no bathroom in our site trailer we were living in, no heat, and that was when we slept. We're fed very frequently, you know, to be honest, and come back and then have some producers say, well, the film needs to be this way or be done faster. And you know, with just a little more time or a few months or even a year in post, that your work could have come out to be awesome. No director wants to have it go for the quick cut where you just get a formula product out there and it's sold in the stores. When you know there were frame rate adjusts that could have been done, or a scene that could have been color corrected to a different temperature for the performance that's there. You know, in post, there's so much you can do now, you know, and unfortunately, you'll make friends and enemies in this business, and that's the one thing I've learned is just to remember all of them and write down notes and say, hey, you know what, glad I learned this. I'll try not to repeat my mistakes. I hope they don't repeat theirs, and the best of luck with all of us, you know.
Right, exactly.
Here's my advice.
One thing, too, I want to tell you, Mike, was really, you know, thanks for what I just mentioned that has made me realize, you know, thanks for not leaving, because you could have left.
Yeah, I wasn't paid. So, yeah, I got to say. And you know what's true? I did try to leave when the first producer before, the guy that was on there to produce before we ended up actually taking the film back into our own hands, but he was trying to direct the film one day, I remember. I think you were there for it. It was a scene with the lesbians, and they weren't like making out or anything. It wasn't sexy, and I was the DP at that point. I was demoted, but just to let you know, the night before, I actually told the main producer, "Hey, on Rot, you know, listen, I if you guys think I'm incompetent or don't want me here, want a better vision of the picture, I'll go home. I'm not being paid. This is costing me money. I can't work on other things. I can't have a regular job. You guys don't want me," and the producer actually stuck with me, so I appreciate that. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute, so you how did you get demoted to DP? Is that what you said?
This is what I've been talking about. It's just that people,
right.
I look at things from a different direction and perspective and have an edit in mind before I start. And I was talking earlier before, the industry professionals who have been working in Hollywood sets as a second unit DP on a huge, big budget film, or they don't, a guy that walks this says, listen, we really just need to rack a focus here and do that. And I think it infuriates him when, as a director, I turn to him and ask, here's my opinion of the scene, what's yours? Their response always has been, I don't know. You're the director. Shouldn't you have a game plan? And my answer is, well, yeah, I have a game plan, but damn it, I want your opinion as well, because you know what? I'm not the only one that's going to be watching this thing. People like you will be as well if it comes out. So if you rented it, how should you feel the scene should play? And as an industry professional, they're not happy with that, you know, and they feel the shoot moves too slowly because I want to get numerous opinions, and it just all comes back to the appreciation of the actors moving gear like LJ. Because if other people in other departments spoke up when I asked a question, that would be great to help me out instead of, you know, berate me for it. You know, I obviously don't want a crew that cuts me off when I'm trying to do something, but when I ask their feedback, I don't want to be knocked in the ground because they're an industry professional and that's not what a director in Hollywood does. Michael Bay didn't do this. Why are you? You know, I don't want to hear that either. You know?
Right.
So very differently.
It all goes back too, is that, you know, like I was saying before, is that, you know, Michael's not your average director that just sits back and just watch a monitor, you know. And so because his brain works 1,000 miles per hour, and he's like, okay, let me think about this, about that, turn around, okay, what do you think? And then people can't catch up with him as far
as
like, okay, what do you think about this, you know?
I'll agree. You know, LJ, that's my – and we all have to realize our flaws. My biggest downside in all these films, and it's like something we couldn't really afford, but I could really have used a really good first AD that I could quietly whisper exactly what I'm thinking to. Because when I'm trying to be like a DP, even though I might not be the camera op, I generally am like a DP. So it's like, hey, the camera goes here, it needs to lit this way, I think, and we need to do this. So, you know, I'm doing too many things at once. And can't express everything the right way because my brain's working so quickly. And always a first AD to help block the actors or let them know, hey, you're separate from this. But that's, again, where not being better than the picture you're shooting is important because if you just bear with it, I think you can get an amazing end result. And independent films generally come out better with groups of friends that are trying to do something as a whole. But, again, it's always important that that group of friends knows what they're doing in the first place, knows the rules of film, knows where their whites need to be, their blacks, their accents. So I'm not just saying, like, if you rent a movie and think you can do better, go make one if you don't know anything. But I'm saying that don't worry about knowing the industry terms and being slammed in the face. You're going to be hit. And I'll tell you what, you look at bands on MySpace, guys who are multi-millionaires all the time, like Metallica, take a beating in the face every single day that are super successful. So if they are, imagine, you know, the people like us that are out there just starting out and getting a feature to direct and someone's like, well, I probably could have done that better. Let me tell them how they could change this, you know. So,
Before we probably end this, I do want to, I forgot to ask this before, and I don't know how much you can actually say, but how did you end up, like, finding producers? Like, a lot of independent filmmakers always want to know this. Is there a way that, you know, that people can learn from your, you know, the way that you did it? Like, how did you find producers? Just networking, or?
We lived homeless. We lived homeless. That's how we found producers. We were working for Corbin in Pittsburgh. We ran out of funds. I was working at a cell phone company I was talking about earlier. I had one check, and it was for about $1,800. And a trip to Las Vegas to the NAPTI was going to be about $1,400, and I just rolled my dice on the table and basically said, let's go out there and see what we can find. And to get finance, it was not an easy road. I mean, before we lived in homeless, I mean, I did have some family back in Florida, but I left to go to Pittsburgh, and I didn't want to come back a failure. I didn't want to say, hey, you know what? I was a guy that made a couple of no-budget movies. We got a little bit of distribution once. People do know who I am, but I'm not making a living. I wanted to come back home with something in the can of value, you know, and just basically if you want to ask a question, I tell you what, never give up. And you know, I don't agree with everything he stands for, but a good guy that I was working with for a little bit was Lloyd Kaufman in terms of marketing yourself is marketing a product. And when I was in Pittsburgh, I was dealing with Lloyd quite a bit. And he's real good at motivating people, and you see a lot of young filmmakers walk into, like, just how to make, you know, make your own damn movie class seminar. And you watch him come out, and you're like, okay, well, this guy's motivating him to do the right thing. The important thing is to not give up, because if you want to know the real way we got financed, it was through 8 fraudulent investors. The original film I moved to Pittsburgh for, there was no real budget. We ran out of money, didn't want to go home, took our last paycheck to go out to NAPTI to promote Scary Tales, got a contract with a distributor that was fraudulent, located 3 names in the contract to find out why this guy was screwing us for Scary Tales. One of the names was Patrick Engelman, who ended up producing the features, and said, hey, you know what? The guy that you were dealing with, I had a falling out with him. Let's do something. So it was a long, long road that is impossible to maybe explain in the radio, but maybe in book form one day. But again, if that happens, that means that people are actually noticing what I'm doing. Because right now, I don't think people want to buy a book on some guy that directed a couple of B-movies and blockbusters. You know. So hopefully the road will continue to prosper and grow for all of us. And LJ and Christian and John will all move forward with us. And Pete and everyone else out there that just worked and did an amazing job. Megan, you know, and we'll all get together and make a great picture one day, like an amazing film. You know, and that's the best thing about all this as well, is you can weed out the bad people and pick up on the good. That's the one thing about this. It's a learning experience. Okay, you know, these people didn't work out. You know what? Maybe you direct 3 films like me and one doesn't come out at all. And you're like, okay, well, what was the problem? And if it was the other 2 came out pretty well, but this one could have improved and this one was bad, are they bad in the same department? If they are, why are these departments bad? Okay, let's take a look. And then you can weed out those individuals and see, okay, were they treating this as a job? Because on our budget, if someone is just treating this as a job, the film never really will grow to prosper anything more than being a product. And if your production values are fairly low to start with, will that product they're trying to create be any good? Probably not. So there's what I learned real quick. It's just a I don't know. It's a long process. I'm still going through it, you know. So.
Well, and it's a learning process. You're learning, and, you know, you're going to move on, and you're going to make mistakes. You're going to learn from them, and then you're going to go on and hopefully not do those mistakes anymore.
That's the goal. So, you know, the one thing I do want to, as soon as there's, like, a distribution deal in place, I want to get, like, copies of Rot out to everyone that was in the film. And I think that everyone there, I'm sure LJ will agree, will be pleasantly surprised when they actually see it. Did you actually show it to anyone aside from yourself, LJ, or was that it just you and the critic? Or
It was me and the critic, and then I think one other person, but that was it. That was it.
So it's been under fairly tight wraps. So the one thing I want to do is I just don't want to, you know, obviously I just send things out where things can get bootlegged at this point because there is an investment that I'm liable for. So that's the word that I don't like. With all these investments, it's the word liability.
Right.
It's a very bad one. So, but I am going to jump off, enjoy my little Disney vacation.
Yeah, I think we'll just end it now. And, I guess if we could say myspace.com/reunionofterror again. LJ, what's your MySpace if anybody wants to contact you?
Mine is myspace.com/LJ O'Neill.
LJ O'Neill. Okay, cool. And hopefully, I just want to let everybody know because I have found out through you guys, through like IMDb and everything, and I've been trying for like months to actually get this interview. It's kind of funny because I didn't even know you guys had the MySpace site and everything.
Yeah.
So I've been trying. Like I actually went through the same day that I found you guys. I actually went through. I tried to go through Joe Castro.
Oh yeah, Joe's a good guy.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, I tried to get him because I knew he had worked. I didn't know to what extent. But I knew he worked, you know, on the movie, so I talked to him, and he had no idea. So, you know, he didn't even know the site was up here. So I told him it was, and then, you know, got you guys to, you know, I wasn't sure. Like, I wasn't even sure if you were the one who, Michael, if you were the one who owned the, who did the Reunion of Terror MySpace site, or if it was like a producer, you know,
yeah,
who had a hand in it.
Yeah. No, I was very quiet. Like, Joe is one of many makeup artists that worked on that film, so Joe does have some remaining makeup effects in there. It came out really well. You know, it's like we did go through a lot because our shoot was not well planned because of budgetary and weather conditions and everything else. So there were quite a few makeup artists that did end up working on that film. And, you know, obviously more money and more time for pre-production would have avoided that, you know, but at least we got the film done, and like I said, Joe did a great job. So I'm glad that you're
Yeah, so I'm hoping a lot more people get a chance to, hear about you guys, add you guys, check out the, you know, progress of it. And hopefully, like you said, like in maybe a couple months, it at least goes direct to video.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm sure it'll do that. I'm hoping. I mean, I never count my blessings, but, I mean, as it was, I think there's already buyers that want to go ahead and pick it up. So, yeah, that should be okay. People should see Reunion of Terror, but... When, I don't know. I'm guessing a few months, so it could be early next year, but it will be out. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. And thanks to everybody, basically, who came on.
Yeah,
and thought,
so hopefully we weren't too rambling there.
No. I think that was the whole point of this.
A long time. But yeah, so, all right, great. Well, thank you very much, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And, you know, you guys are welcome back anytime if you guys want to come back again or whatever and, like, check up on the progress of what's going on.
All right, cool, man.
Oh,
we absolutely, I totally appreciate it, man. So take care. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye. All right, everybody. That was LJ O'Neill, and also it was Michael Hoffman who. And a bunch of other people. We had Megan Jones, and we just. I don't want to go through everybody because there's a lot of people on here, and you guys heard them all. Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you guys had a good time. Hope you learned some cool lessons about filmmaking, and found this very informative and things to not do or things to do. You know. So thank you so much, and tune in tomorrow where we have the Dunwich Horror Show, and this whole week we've got a whole load of shows going on, so keep you guys updated and everything, and keep checking in, and come to my chat room or come to my MySpace, myspace.com/JonathanMoodyWillRockYou. All right, thank you so much.